We'll call the Gage County Board of Supervisors meeting for Wednesday, July 26, 2023, to order at 9:14. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Open Meetings Act is on the wall to my left. Attendance by observation, Jurgens, Haxby, Schuler, Tiemann, Dorns, Waverly, and Lytle. Up first is the consent agenda. Any items on this may be pulled off by a board member if wanted. There's a sign-in sheet on the table to my right for the liquor license that's coming up. There will be another sign-up sheet for the hearing for the hog facility as well shortly thereafter. Consent agenda, approve the general agenda, approve minutes of the meeting held July 12, 2023, and the correction to the June 12, 2023 committee meetings minutes is done by motion at the June 28, 23 Board of Supervisors meeting. Approve all claims through July 26, 2023 in the amount of $654,105.35, except claim number 2307-0203 to Johnny's Welding in the amount of $5,127.46. Claim number 2307-0105 to Beatrice Lawn Care, Inc. in the amount of $100. And claim number 2307-0210 to RL Team and Construction, Inc. in the amount of $20,711.39 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve utility permit number 1281 to Windstream Nebraska LLC. Windstream will be installing a new communications line to residents at 11376 West Hoyt Road. Windstream will start at pedestal 482 KC in the South Greater Ditch, bore under Hoyt Road to the North Greater Ditch, then on to the residence property. From there, plow new line to the residence home located on the north, located north of Section 33 and south of Section 28, Township 4 North, Range 5 East, Blakely Township, and approve the chairman signing the engagement letter with the Nebraska Auditor of Public Accounts conforming audit services for the fiscal year that ended June 30th, 2023. I'd ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, unless there's an
motion
item.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Swavely, second by Dorn. Any items to pull off? If not, please vote. Seven in favor, motion carries. With that, I will skip ahead to a timed event we have. I'd ask for a motion to go into public hearing to approve or disapprove recommendation for Class C liquor license for the Beatrice Country Club, Inc., doing business as Beatrice Country Club at 916.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Swavely, second by Dorn. Please vote. Seven in favor. We're in public hearing. There was a sign-up sheet. Would anyone like to speak in favor or opposition towards the liquor license for the Beatrice Country Club? They'll be changing management. I talked to Mr. Klaba on this. He won't be here today. The previous trade name was Classics. They're just making a change, basically.
She's retiring.
New management. Anyone from the public? As the clerk said, this is administrative jumbo we have to do to go through. This will go on to the liquor license or the liquor commission. Do we have anything from the sheriff today on this?
No, not one. That's just for the license. This is on a special use.
Oh, I see. If there's nothing for this special use permit in public hearing, I'll still welcome all of you, even though you're here for other items. I'd ask for a motion to come out of public hearing at 9:18.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Lytle. Second by Schuler. Please vote. Seven in favor. We're out of public hearing. We will go back to...
Hearing and then to approve or disapprove that recommendation.
I'll ask for a motion to approve the recommendation for Class C liquor license for the Beatrice Country Club.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Swavely, second by Dorn. Any discussion on this liquor license? Please vote then. 7 in favor. Now we'll go back to regular agenda. Approve or disapprove claim number 230702023 to Johnny's Welding in the amount of $5,127.46.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Lytle, second by Dorn. Any discussion? Please vote. 6 in favor, with Mr. Juergens abstaining. Motion carries. Approve or disapprove claim number 230701.05 to Beatrice Lawn Care, Inc. in the amount of $100, and claim number 230702.10 to RL Team Construction, Inc. in the amount of $20,711.39. This would bring the amount of claims approved through July 12, 2023 to $680,044.20. These are two companies I'm involved with.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Swavely, second by Schuler. Any discussion on these items? If not, please vote. 6 in favor, with Thiemann abstaining. Motion carries. Comments from the public for future agenda items or general information from the board for Board of Supervisors? Anything not on the agenda that anyone would like to bring to our attention? I'd like to say welcome all of you. Thank you for coming. I'll say that now before anybody talks. Might be better. We'll move on to committee reports. Building and grounds, winter lights. Mr. Swavely.
Okay. We've had some problems with our controllers that run the air conditioning and stuff here in the courthouse that's dealing with the thermal or the underground water conditioner. So we're going to put some new controllers on. David brought that up Monday morning at our committee meetings, and they'll do that so it'll be a lot easier to reset them, because when we get a power bump, that's what's been causing it. We have had 4 power bumps in the month of July, and every time it goes off, it shuts the air conditioning and the circulation pumps off. So we're going to remedy that. We're still getting some ideas from King Little and those guys about trying to remove this column. Okay, that's still, we're working on it. Looks like it might be a lot to do, but we'll wait until the outcome comes and see what happens. Okay, so CTI, that's the outfit that you see a truck parked out here this past week and a half on the northeast corner, are working on updating the electronics in both of the courtrooms upstairs. That's supposed to be done by the end of this week, okay? So, and David told us Monday morning that he anticipates not any problems, because everything's been, all the lines have been run and everything's available to those guys to hook up. Gus, did you know if they got the compressor fixed yet? I know they had a compressor on one of your units over there. It's here. I didn't know whether Noakes put it. Okay.
I have not heard yet.
Okay. That's about it that I have right now. Okay, so.
Thank you, Mr. Swaver. Equalization, we had a brief overview of what's going on right now. We've just received protests, gone through that process. That is due the 25th? Could have been.
Was the last day for protests, so yep.
So that is complete for this year. We had 322 this year. Not sure how many we heard, under a dozen at this level. At the assessor's office, they went through at least 200. I don't know how many they settled ahead of time, but how many actually came in. We'll probably have some going to Turk. That's all right, too, but we'll just keep trying to make this better. I think there will be a real conscious effort this year to make some corrections.
Is there a deadline to certify these values to the state?
Well, I don't know about certifying, but for you guys, your deadline was the 25th
of July.
But we had to hear all the protests and stuff. Yes.
And technically, your vote the 24th took care of that.
Yeah. So it set the values.
As far as I know it.
Of what they are.
Any other questions for equalization? Finance and insurance, Mr. Juergens.
Large ticket items, advanced correctional health care, jail on-site medical, $10,205.58. Beatrice Concrete, sand and gravel, rock and gravel, $47,654.05. RLT Construction Incorporated, Township Gravel and Hauling, $20,711.39. Sap Brothers Petroleum Fuel, Oil and Grease, $27,767.69. Engage, Gage Area Growth Enterprises, quarterly expenses, $32,309.61. City Beatrice, quarterly 9/11 service fee, $59,106.16.
Thank you, sir. Human Resources, Employee Relations. We'll be making some changes at the Highway Department, just kind of reconfiguring some things, trying to run a little leaner and meaner. We'll continue watching that to see how that plays out. But as we've reduced staff and tried to move people around, it looks like we're getting a little more performance or a little bit more... little go for the dollar, we'll say, and things are working, but we're carefully reviewing that and moving forward. Law enforcement, emergency management, Mr. Lytle.
Unless Gus says he's got anything, I don't believe we have anything for law enforcement this morning or emergency management.
Anything for P&Z prior to?
Everything is coming up, so we'll address that when it does. So.
Thank you. Road and Bridge, Mr. Jurg, Ms. Haxby.
The road department hauled things, filled things, fixed things. The engineer and the highway superintendent went and looked at the potential hog barn on the Liberty Road. The engineer had no concerns other than line of sight issues with some right-of-way thickets and brush, but that should be removed. They checked the 162nd and B line. They may change the stop signs there. They also looked at Sergeant and 13th if a stop sign would be allowable, and the engineer said it would not be justified. We talked about trees in right of way and getting kind of cracking down on that. The plan is to try to hit every home with fiber in Gage County, and if we're going to do that, it would make it a lot more feasible and easier for us to apply for those and get providers to come in if our right-of-ways are clear. The broadband project, they're finishing up constructing the Pickerel DSA today. They should be done with the Adams DSA in the next week or two, and they're already rolling on the Cortland one, so moving along. The crew to start blowing in fiber starts first week of August.
Thank you very much. We have a 9:30 timed event, a public hearing for support and opposition for special use permit 2023-2-A. There's a sign-up sheet on the table to my right for anyone that would like
I
to speak.
I think there's one around, actually, for this morning.
Okay.
I think that's the liquor one.
You can
take the page off.
It's being passed around as we speak. At this time... I'll give it to Ms. Wiegand. We can receive the recommendation from planning and zoning.
Did you ask me something?
Yes, if you'd give us a recommendation from planning and zoning on special use permit 2023-2A for the placement of a swine CAFO.
Yep. This is the time of multitasking, I guess. So here, we'll take the fairer shirt off here. But with all due respect for everybody that's in the audience today, this has been a long process for everybody, and I'm sure we also have people in the audience from the second project that are here just to learn more about the project, to express their concerns, both pro and con. So P&Z had their hearing a week ago again. The county attorney, Roger, was there, and also Amanda was there. Absence now of Jacob Meyer, not with our representing. But as we go back through the process, due process takes time, and it just doesn't happen just overnight. And it has been a long process for everyone. But through the recommendation of P&Z Commission, we had six individuals that were there. James Lenners was not able to be there because he was out of the country at the time. They stood with their current motion on the first hearing, which, with two conditions, was to recommend approval. Those two conditions were that four rows of trees be planted around the building site, and that the species and so forth would be through the recommendation guidelines that the Nebraska NEB guide provides. The second condition was that manure be injected only, except in the event of catastrophic or emergency situations, which Nutrient Advisors is also here, so they can kind of adhere, you know, and Carl is here and Dean is here to express what that might be, that circumstance might be. Through friendly amendment, it was asked that through the monitoring, wellhead monitoring, that three wells be placed. Common procedure is that two, I think, are placed downgraded from the existing well site. It was passed that three wells, of which two would be at the request of the State Department, and then one be added at the request of Gage County P&Z's recommendation, and that site plan would be monitored or decided by the NDEE. As we go back through planning and zoning, Title 130, which is the Nebraska Wastewater Management Regulations that all CAFOs have to adhere to. So that was back in 2011 under Governor Heinemann's recommendations as livestock facilities started to get larger and manure management plans had to be adhered to. For a lot of producers, when you talk to producers in Gage County, doesn't matter what species you're talking about, as you get larger, nutrient management plans have to be adhered to, inspections have to be done. And so a lot of them hire outside of their farm because they have to have soil tests and so forth. So they hire companies like Environmental Sciences, like Nutrient Advisors, to assist with that nutrient management, the overall facility plan that is continually under the scrutiny of the state of Nebraska under Title 130. As I shared with you at committee meeting, the construction and operating permit has been received. It was received before we went into the public hearing for P&Z. As of that day, it's been approved. I also shared with you the letters, the public comment that the State Department had received from letters that they had gotten placed on record. That has been placed on record. I do have copies of those particular letters that were written on this particular Hanover project, and the state has sent a letter back to those individuals. That's the letter that you would have received Monday morning as to answering the questions that they particularly had. So the other thing is that Scott Skabaka with the lower NRD also responded to the applicant in the public comment side. And ultimately, the district for Lower Big Blue's biggest concern is that they have to adhere to the nutrient plan that's on file and that they protect the ground and surface water. And again, hiring a manure management, you know, advisor such as this in the case of Nutrient Advisors is that double check mark. So, again, three conditions is what the commission placed on this particular permit. Again, we had six people that were there. The vote was 5-4, one against, so and then one absent. So.
Thank you, Lisa. I will just at this time, before going into public hearing, state, too, that we did receive a protest petition. as that was checked by our regs, that will require a two-thirds majority, super majority on this vote, which would be a vote of 5. Just as our regs state.
Are you marking the exhibits for record?
I will. This was turned in well prior to today, so you want me to count this as an exhibit for today?
I would go ahead and.
Okay. I'll give it exhibit number 1 then.
Thank you, Council. With that, I'd ask for a motion to go into public hearing in support or opposition from the public for special use permit 2023-2A for the placement of a swine CAFO to be located on the northwest quarter of section 1157, Hanover Township at 934.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Swavely, seconded by Dorn. Please vote. 7 in favor, motion carries. We are in public hearing. We have our first sheet up here of people that would like to speak. We'll be limiting comment to 3 minutes per person, similar to what the P&Z did. There are other sign-up sheets, so if you'd like to speak or even write down that you're here and not speak, please sign up on the sheet. We'll just go down right in order. As you come up, I'll have you give your name and address for the record, and then we'll swear you in. First up is Dean Otto. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
Yes, I do.
Please give your name and address for the record.
I am Dean Otto, 633 State Highway 43. I am one of the applicants.
Do you want to run a timer for everyone?
Thank you.
Sil? Give us just a second. We're on the timer now.
We were timing people before, but we didn't do this, so that's why I didn't.
Okay. I like to wait until you have to have it to tell you.
No, you do this to me, don't you? All right, how many minutes?
3 minutes.
Okay.
Just a brief overview. Where I live, there's 5 hog buildings, 2 outside lagoons, 1 mile south of me. We do not have an issue with the smell. Whoever runs them does a very nice job. From them, in the last few years, less than a quarter mile south, there's been one new house built. You go southwest, there's been another new house built about a quarter mile. You go another half mile, there's been a third house built within this hog facility. It does not hurt where people want to live. If you want to live someplace, you're going to live someplace. The smell's not there. As far as our own house, the manure gets spread on our own property where we live. We spread chicken manure, cow manure within 30 feet of our house. We live in the country. We don't seem to have a smell problem with that. So that's all I got to say.
Are there any questions for Mr. Otto? Generally, we have the applicant come back up afterwards if there are any other questions. And I don't know that we generally time the applicant, so you may have got shortchanged right off the bat. But if there are questions afterwards, we'll have you come back up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Carl Jacobson. Name and address, please.
Carl Jacobson, 1903 Road 9, York, Nebraska.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
I suppose we'll tell him again since we'll just keep it consistent.
I guess I don't have, you know, we've kind of went through everything on this project. Ultimately, I will just kind of give a brief back overview of the project and then ultimately can come back for any other questions. But ultimately, working with Dean Otto, Summit Pork is proposing the 6250 2500 animal unit feeder to finish barn. Worked with Andy Schulting, Nutrient Advisors, to build out the manure management plan. To bring you guys have all had that, seen that. But ultimately, this facility will house the 6250 head of feeder to finish swine for Bruce Livingston Enterprises out of Fairbury, Nebraska. That facility was going to turn about three times a year. It's going to be a cross-ventilated barn, so basically the one side will have a curtain, the other side will have the fans. It'll all be power-ventilated, so we will not be, you know, a lot of the old barns we see nowadays where the curtain's on both sides, where we use the natural air to ventilate the barn. So when it's cold out or, you know, smaller pigs, less air, we'll be more efficient with power usage ultimately, but ultimately be able to really manage that facility. Two wells are already on site. We have our commingled well permit with Lower Big Blue. That's been approved. And then last week we actually received our CNO permit from the state of Nebraska, which I, Lisa, have you got? All of you guys should have that. So that is something I know you guys were asking for in our last meeting. Outside of that, I guess any questions up front? Like I said, we can always answer questions, but that's kind of the overview of the facility, how we operate it.
Any questions for Mr. Jacobson at this time? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Lisa?
Yes.
I had a question. Planning and zoning, there's a lot of records that have been offered by both Mr. Wallman and the applicants that have information.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to mark those as in the record?
So for the P&Z hearing, we had I did bring those up. We had some new documentation that was presented to us, but then also we entered into record all the previous documentation that was given to us at the first hearing process. So on that March 2nd date, too.
And that's why I'm bringing this up now, because there's a lot of information that I know has gotten to the board either through emails or whatever. I think it's important that information be made of record because it's
sure.
important. And I think it's going to be considered by the board as far as making their decisions. So,
and they have been provided a copy of the book with the amendment or amended, and then all of this board should have had the copy of the first one too. So, and then what in addition to what Dawn has received, what has been presented to her at her hearing.
Okay.
So
as not to hold this up, but I think it'd be good to have a motion that all the records from planning and zoning, including the first hearings, be made available to the clerk mm-hmm. to be made a part of the official record. And we can do that later because there's a lot of them.
Okay.
And I just think it's important from both sides.
Yeah.
Do you want that later on in the agenda, make it an official motion?
I just suggest you make that motion now before I forget it.
So move.
Second. Well,
we can't make a motion in public hearing, though, can we?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
I mean, because if you want to wait to vote on it, that's fine. But I just...
We have a motion by Juergens, second by Swavely, to make all records previously received from planning and zoning, as well as the board, part of the public record and available to the clerk's office for future viewing.
And then Dawn, at her, when she has time, can mark all those as separate numbers.
Can we vote in public hearing?
I'd just wait until you get done with it. Like I said, it's one of those things. I made it myself a note on that because I know there's a lot of information. And in the interest of time, it would take a long time to go through all that stuff. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Council. Not now.
Okay.
We appreciate you keeping us out of trouble. And I apologize if I say the SNCC's name wrong. Is it Mitch Baum? Baum? Name and address for the record, please.
Mitch Baum, 10640 County Highway D20, Alden, Iowa.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead, sir. All right.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you again here in support of the project representing Summit. So we'll just wait for any other questions after the public hearing or during. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Baum? Andy Schulting.
Good morning. Andy Schulting with Nutrient Advisors, 449 East Deer Street, West Point, Nebraska.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please begin, sir.
Yeah. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm with Nutrient Advisors. I've had the opportunity to work with Dean and Summit Ag in development of their permit applications and their nutrient management plan. I think we first met with Lisa about this project in December of 22, so it's been a long process, and through that process we've submitted initial applications, initial nutrient management plans, several addendums and additional information along the way. We've completed the odor footprint tool. We've completed the livestock development matrix. Part of our role through permitting is to sit down with the county, Lisa, as well as the applicant, and just go through all of the items that establish what is a good place for a livestock operation. Certainly, your county regulations are first and foremost. We ask the question, can this site be here? And as we look at your regulations, this is A1 Ag, requires a half-mile setback, had an excellent score on the livestock development matrix, and at the 96% odor footprint level, there's no residences within that projected odor footprint, which is a UNL tool. So the point that I say that is that from a livestock planning standpoint, this is a very good site. Dean has a lot of acres available for the utilization of the nutrients. We've included about 535 acres, I think, is in the nutrient management plan. Our plan shows that that's about 100 acres more than he actually needs. And when Tiffany O'Neill, who is the nutrient management specialist at NDEE, evaluated the nutrient management plan, she used a different planning tool, and her numbers only showed that he needed about 350 acres to utilize the nutrients. In addition to that, we've submitted as an addendum an additional 594 acres outside of the nutrient management plan that Dean has available when and if he has a desire or a need to utilize nutrients in other places. As Carl stated, we did receive the state construction operating permit, which I think at your last hearing of this project was going to be a requirement. And so now we have that permit in hand. The state has fully approved, and they are approved to build from the state standpoint. One caveat to that was the development of a groundwater monitoring plan, which your planning commission, in addition, required or proposed that we include three wells in that plan. In the last week, we have developed that groundwater monitoring plan. We did email it to Lisa. Do they have a copy of that?
I do not. I'm sorry, I do not have that.
Okay.
My apologies.
I brought copies of that as a reference.
Thank you.
I should state that this plan has not been sent into the state yet, but because of the proposed condition of the Planning Commission, I wanted to include this to show you what a groundwater management plan looks like. We did include three wells in this groundwater monitoring plan. That includes one upgradient well and two downgradient wells. So I heard the timer. I can sit down and come back later to explain that, whatever you want me to do.
Any questions for Mr. Schulting at this time?
Question. Those three monitoring, groundwater monitoring, is one like considered upstream and two downstream?
Yes, one upgradient well, two downgradient wells is the right term. The purpose of that is to establish a baseline, and then the downgradient wells are to determine and find quickly, because we go into the first encountered water with these wells to determine if there is any contaminants reaching static water. Static water to our best estimate based on the test hole that Mr. Otto drilled last summer was at 42 foot to static water. So the process would typically be a 2-inch PVC casing goes down until the first static water is encountered, and they usually drill another 7 to 10 feet. We want to monitor that top of the water profile because that's where contaminants will first show up.
What would the process be if there's a change in contaminants in the water from upstream to
downstream? If there's anything encountered, the state has, I guess I should explain, these are monitored twice a year, spring and fall. And the state, those are required to be submitted to the state. The state evaluates the data. If they see a spike in any of the contaminants, and I will spell out that is nitrate, ammonium, and chloride are the primary contaminants that would be first found with a manure leak. So they'll evaluate those levels. If they have concerns from the results, they will send an inspector out typically right away to meet with a grower to inspect the site and try to figure out, you know, if or when or how that facility is contributing to that contamination.
And that's monitored by the state, and that would affect the state permit as
so,
well.
So it's monitored by a licensed well monitoring technician. That's
I'm
a
sorry,
state licensed.
The reporting goes to the state.
Correct.
And then the corrective
NDE.
Action would be by
yeah.
work through the state.
Yeah, NDEE has a separate groundwater unit that just evaluates those plans and the data.
And since it's turned into the state, that'd be available to the public?
Absolutely.
And you were planning to go with three wells?
Yes, we did include this three wells in this plan. Sometimes with swine operations, at a minimum they require two. Typically larger operations do require three, and since your planning commission suggested three, we just went ahead and included that as part of this plan.
Because the state isn't requiring.
The state doesn't determine. So if you look at that construction operating permit, there's a line item in that permit that says you need to propose, have approved, and then implement a groundwater monitoring plan prior to operating the waste control facility, which is the pit underneath the barn. And so they don't specify exactly what it needs to be. They rely on a consultant to submit a plan. They evaluate the plan and either approve it or request changes. So that process has not been done yet. The permit was just received last week. The Planning Commission met last week. We just wanted to get this done quickly so that you could see this.
So the state could still say just one well is necessary, but your plan is for three?
But we've planned on three, and if we propose three to the state, which we will, they're not going to come back and say, well, we don't need three. I mean, they're going to approve
okay.
or disapprove the
I
plan.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you, Eric, if I may, at the first public hearing or informational meeting, I asked about, well, that's when we thought the water table was higher mm-hmm. than what it is, and I asked about perforated pipe around the floor of the pit, and I was told that it isn't a requirement, that that's something that you plan to do. Would you consider putting perforated pipe underneath the floor in sand? My purpose or my thoughts behind that is that if it did leak, at the very remote chance that it would, but if it does leak, that would catch it before it would get into the groundwater. And it could be looked at, well, the outlet
mm-hmm.
could be checked visually to see if anything is leaving it.
Sure.
And it would catch it before it get into the water, which, I mean, it can take years to get into the water, can take months. You just don't know.
Sure.
I'm just wondering if that's... So, I like that idea myself.
So I'll speak to that idea.
Sure.
Just off the cuff. I can tell you that really hasn't been considered. And generally speaking, the thought of perforated tile under a waste control facility would not be promoted or frowned upon because we take it away from, you know, if there was a leak and we're 42 feet to static water, that's a tremendously safe filter, right? I mean, the soil is one of the best filters that we have for contaminants. If we take that and let it leach 1 foot into a perforated tile, That's going to outlet somewhere, and so we take a potential leak that could be contained in soil and immediately discharge it into a surface water circumstance. So that would be the main concern of just creating a man-made conduit directly to surface water, whether that be the road ditch or the creek or whatever. So,
but you would know it much sooner. You wouldn't wait for it to percolate through 42 feet and then find out there's a problem that may be getting worse.
Sure.
And could be rectified simpler, possibly.
Sure. If monitored, I mean, daily. I mean you couldn't monitor that tile even monthly and say, oh, my gosh, it's been leaking for the last month into the creek. I mean, it just proposes a risk. But I understand your point.
The tile that goes around the outside of the building, that doesn't just dump to ground. That goes to
an inspection
port. So that doesn't just dump to atmosphere or dump to surface water. It would go to a pumpable area or a contained spot.
Yep.
So I just wanted
would
to
be this. You could.
I just wanted to kind of point that out.
Okay.
If it would go out, I didn't know the name for it, but I saw that did flow into a encapsulated area at least. So it wouldn't be
flowing directly into the water or the stream.
Mitch, do you have any experience? Yeah.
And frankly, with the engineering involved in the pit structure, the perimeter drain tile and inspection port is an additional parameter beyond requirements.
Sure.
And it's standard practice in all of the facilities we build. I have a very large concern about the practice you've recommended, just in regards to the pit floor, the compacted soil for the structure of the building itself. The perimeter drain tile, frankly, is what is there. One, if there is saturated water in that soil, that groundwater won't push that pit or move that pit. That's what that tile's for, similar to a home, because there's more risk of water getting into a pit than there is the fibrous manure getting out of a pit. So
right.
I feel very confident and a lot of history behind that process and that purpose.
So you feel the tile under the floor would affect the integrity?
Yeah, actually, if there is any existing, say a field is pattern tiled, and that's at say 4 feet, and a pit was being excavated, and this isn't the case on this particular site, but if there was any field tile underneath the pit floor in Iowa, we're required to cap that, collapse it, and remove it for the integrity of the pit. So putting tile in under a floor, in most cases, we're required to take it out.
Ms. Saxby?
So that they did those drillings, and they showed that the ground held moisture essentially more so. You guys were going to take that into account when you designed the structure of that building. Did you guys adapt to the findings of that boring?
Yeah, let me say that I'm not the engineer. I'm the nutrient management specialist. But we both work closely with the engineer. They were the ones that ordered the geotech investigation. They reviewed all the data and still felt confident in the existing design of the pit, of the elevations and where it was situated. I don't know if you have anything to
add. As did NDEE in their further than issuing of the permit.
I think I asked this question before, but EQIP standard, is it to at least that standard? I think it's depth of concrete.
Yeah, it's engineered and approved by NDEE. As far as EQIP standards and those, there's different standards from a number of different organizations. I haven't followed in and dug into EQIP specifically, because it's a program specific, in my opinion, for government funding of projects, and we're not seeking any government funding of this project. EQIP is Environmental Quality Improvement Program or plan.
Right, but their concept is to make sure it's environmentally safe. So.
Yes, which would be no different than NDEE in our opinion. Okay.
Is there a concern, or is it addressed to where you apply the waste to any neighboring hog facilities as far as spread of disease? You follow what I'm saying? It's, you know, if you've got
more
a hog
or less
facility here across the road from the acres that you're applying the waste to, is that addressed?
Yeah, and from an industry standpoint, I would say that we're confident in working with others in the area in regards to that. Andy can speak to requirements there, but working with the neighbors that have the hogs there to the south in the same section, we're all getting along well and don't see a biosecurity risk whatsoever, and especially in this case either. So, Andy?
Yeah, I would just add that obviously biosecurity is a huge risk in swine production, and every time a truck load of manure leaves the facility, there's just as much risk of that truck coming back on the facility from a biosecurity standpoint. So, number one, in the field application, subsurface injecting, which you are requiring as a condition, is one of the major things and improvements that we can do to ensure that if there is any disease in that manure, that it's injected into the soil and that it's not released to the surface or the atmosphere. And so total containment from the pump to the truck to the injector and into the soil is an extremely safe practice. And there's really no incentive by a truck or an applicator to be driving around where they shouldn't be and then coming back on site. It's just an equal risk for both facilities. So both are highly motivated to keep separation, go to designated areas, and move on from there.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. One more.
Saxby.
Yep. This might be more for Dean. You said you were doing a direct inject. And when we did that math, it ends up being about 4,000 gallons an acre, right?
Yes.
And you're using an 8,000-gallon applicator?
9,500.
95, so a little over 2 acres a shot.
Yep.
That will be painful.
Cattle manure is one spreader per acre, so for us.
We plant about 20 acres of fill when we plant in the beginning, and it's painful. So
it is painful. It takes time.
Two is going to be fun.
Yep. Like I said, we do our cattle manure is all one spreader per acre, so one semi-load an acre. So, yeah, it's not something you wake up tomorrow and think you're going to be done on Wednesday.
Any other questions for Mr. Schulte and your crew right now? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Chris Bosquet. Name and address for the record, please.
My name is Chris Bosquet. I live at 9019 South 72nd Street, Lincoln.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I so swear.
Please begin, sir.
Well, I just want to say thank you to Gage County and the members of the board for entertaining this project and also for being livestock friendly. And I think that's for an individual who grew up on a livestock farm and advocates for livestock producers on a regular basis, thank you for making that designation. And what that does for farmers and ranchers and livestock producers in general is it gives them the assurance that if they can meet the project or the zoning regulations within a county, that, you know, they're welcomed and that the county has made that position. And I just thank you for that stance. And as we enter into Fair Week and where we're going to go celebrate livestock here in Gage County, I just appreciate that. And I think what livestock development does for a county is it really just keeps the soul and the economic vibrancy within the county. And it also provides an opportunity for farmers to bring back the next generation. When you have two grain farmers and they're both trying to grow, one of them's trying to take ground from the other. And the way that farmers can grow on a sustainable and environmentally friendly way is by incorporating livestock production into their management portfolio. And I think that's an example of what's happening today and what the Otto family's trying to do is create efficiencies within their operation to bring back that next generation while also, bringing tax dollars to the county. And that's exactly what livestock growth and development does. And projects like this not only benefit, rural Nebraska and rural Gage County, but it also benefits the businesses on Main Street. It brings economic vitality to the plumbers, to the construction people, people selling gravel, and even, daycares. And I think that's something that is something that is an excellent opportunity for Gage County. And again, I really appreciate you guys making the stance of being livestock friendly and advocating and supporting livestock growth and development within your county. So thank you very much.
Questions for Mr. Bosquet? What's your occupation, sir?
So I work for the Alliance for the Future of Agriculture in Nebraska, which is an organization that was created by Nebraska Farm Bureau, the Nebraska Cattlemen, Nebraska State Dairy Association, the Nebraska Pork Producers, the Corn Board, the Soybean Board, or Soybean Associations, the Poultry Association. Basically, the ag industry in Nebraska created AFAN to support livestock growth and development as a way to create more value for the grain consumed within counties in Nebraska or within Nebraska's borders. I also serve as the executive director for the Nebraska State Dairy Association. Grew up on a dairy farm, and so, dairy's in my blood, but supporting animal agriculture is definitely one thing that I'm extremely passionate about. So that's who I am.
Thank you, sir. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Max Larson, it's not checked whether you'd like to speak or not. Thank you, sir. Hayden Otto. Name and address for the record, please.
Hayden Otto, 255 State Highway 43, Adams, Nebraska.
Will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you. Sir.
So I'm Hayden Otto. I'm son of Dean Otto. I farm with my dad and my mom, so I'm involved in the operation on day-to-day process and have been with this barn as well. I was lucky to be able to go to a beginning farmer conference in Omaha this last week, and I kind of shared some of our struggles with getting this passed with some of the other farmers from, like, Iowa that have been around these hog farms and learn a little bit more about it. They had asked who we were doing business with for the hog barn, and I told them Summit Pork. The first things, and I'm very proud to say, the first things out of their mouth was that hog barn will be cleaner than the acreages around it. So I didn't know these guys. They're in their mid-20s, local hog farmers, but they did have a Summit Pork in their backyard. I don't know how close that is, but that's what their words were, and they said how clean it would be. I guess they also talked about doing more with less, being a young farmer. I'll be working around that for my whole life, hopefully. I hope to farm for my whole life. So bringing our yields up, we don't just want to be at county average. We want to keep pushing that up. So that's one way we choose to do it. So if there's any questions, I hope I kept it short and sweet. So. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Steve Hofer. Name and address for the record, please.
Steve Hofer, 1730 Fletcher Avenue, Lincoln, Nebraska.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I do.
Please begin, sir.
I am Steve Hofer. I work for the Nebraska Pork Producers Association out of Lincoln. I've been in the swine industry 35 years. I grew up on a diversified crop and livestock operation in northeast Nebraska. What I would like to talk about is I have raised pigs in Gage County about 15 years ago. I lived an eighth of a mile from the operation where I finished my pigs. If you look back 30 years ago, Gage County was in the top 25 counties in the United States for pork production. And as I worked for Land O'Lakes in this area, a high percentage of producers had hogs. And the industry has left the state in a lot of ways, but we produce about 32% of the pigs that we produce in Nebraska, that we farrow, we finish. And Nebraska is poised for growth in the swine industry. We have the land, we've got the pig availability, and we've got the packing facilities. And I just want to encourage you, as a livestock-friendly county, I just want to raise support or vote support for this opportunity. So thank you. Any questions?
Thank you very much, sir. I apologize. I can't read this name. This is Bob, Robert Wallman. You made this tough on me. I was trying to read your name, sir. I got it from the address. Name and address, please.
Hold on a second.
Please be careful on the step there, too.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Bob.
Looking at this letter, too, we won't have that. I won't tolerate it on either side. So we'll be professional and use good courtesy towards both sides. Name and address, please, for the record.
Robert Wallman, Adams, Nebraska.
Will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Okay, first of all, on the four rows of trees, I asked for four rows. I mean, four. And then I asked also that put a time limit on when those trees are planted. I don't want it going 10 years down the road, 5 years down the road. You need to start them right away. Then what else I put in my packet you guys all received. Pretty well. I hope most of you have gone through that all. And I have explained that before, I believe. A lot of the problems with this unit is when we see the Ideas out there with their chicken houses, we see the Weiss's out there with their chicken houses, we see the DeCalsis with their chicken houses, they all live there. They all work it. They all pay for it themselves. Here we have nobody that's lives by it, besides they're putting it on the neighbors. He said that he didn't have any problems with the hog sheds by his house. But why isn't this unit by his house? They say it doesn't smell. Does it or doesn't it? So my thinking is, it wouldn't be out of line to ask that the co-applicants would have to spend at least 2 hours a week in that building. I see nothing wrong with that. Every farmer out there, we want beginning farmers. We want small farmers. We want starting farmers. We want livestock friendly. How are we going to do this with big units out there? And they don't work at them. They don't go in them themselves. They just have some manager out there from someplace else. This isn't small farmers. They don't help small farmers at all. Let's have some livestock friendly then. I had nothing against when he first called me. He said we would like to put up a hog shed, him and my boy. I had nothing against that at first. Then when I found out it was a large operation like this, I said no. So that's my concern. I think we need to think about this and how we want our county to look. I think our county, especially when we get in the northern edge, we know we're getting closer to more people coming in from that area. We got a good school system. This would just deter it. So I ask that you guys really consider that strongly. It will take our, it will take the value of our homes down, our property down. The guy across the road can't build, have, can't sell his out for acreages now because of this.
Please finish your thought, Mr. Olin. Thank you. Ms. Wiggin, I did talk to Mr. Wallman this morning. He had asked specifically about some pieces of property that were not notified. And just while you're up here, just so that I don't get any names wrong, it's my understanding that they would be outside of a mile. They'd be on the other side of the road. It's, but could you give Ms. Wiggin the locations of those houses to, or those proper, well, not houses, the property owners, just to make sure that I'm right in telling you this? I don't want to misstate something. I assume it's, once I checked after we talked, I assume that's outside of that 1 mile. It's the 1 mile plus a road and the next.
No, your road is the road is the property line. All our property out there is the road. The center of the road's property line.
Could you give her the pieces of property though, just to make sure we did give the or not the pieces of property, even the owners.
Referencing to?
Yes, that's what I'm not sure. I know one of them was Marilyn Folkert's.
You have Marilyn Folkert's ground, which butts up against the corner. I mean, you got the center. The center of the road is the property line. So then you've got that road, that property meeting, both properties meeting in the center of the line, center of the road. Then you've got those to the south of me. I haven't even checked the ones to the west of me. I know there's another one to the north. They meet the property.
Would you be able to give her those names or those parcels at least just to make sure? I think...
My argument is this with this. This person called me and asked me about it, so I looked it up. And my thought behind it is this: is if you have, we know that the property, if the hog shed sits here, and there's a house 2,640 feet from it, exactly, it hits that spot. They have to get permission from that person with that house. Build that hog shit.
Not permission, but notify them, you mean?
I think they have to get permission because you're with it. You're half a mile.
But would you be able to get this week in those parcels?
So what I'm saying here is this: that property butts right up against it. Now, I'm doing this for both of our favors because if it goes to court, if it would go to court, either side can sit there and sue and win. In court.
But Mr. Wallman, would you be able to get her those parcels or let our zoning coordinator know the parcels you're talking about specifically so that we can
give me a flat book, I can find them for her.
Either now or...
I don't have my list here, so I'll defer to the county attorney for what to be done.
Or I guess I'll ask you, did you notify everyone within the...
The list was prepared by the county assessor with their assistance after we went back and reevaluated the setbacks from the county line, or not county line, excuse me, but from the property line. So that particular list was provided by the assessor.
So I guess I would make the statement here that it's prepared properly. We feel that the notifications were
properly
proper.
Also, because if you vote for our side, I don't want them coming back in and suing, and vice versa.
I believe we've notified the proper people. If we're wrong, it's I don't believe we are though. The window was made larger. I don't know what else I can say on that. If
no, I mean you just raised a point that.
And it's a point taken as well, but we believe that we've notified everyone properly.
You understand what I'm saying, though, Roger?
No, but that's okay. I mean, you can bring it to us. We've been through this twice.
I will duly note also that just for a matter of record, the sign has been posted on the property since the end of February, so and has not been removed. So.
That's fine, but I mean, you still got to notify.
Well, but she called you and you told her about it.
That's
right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, it was taken care of then. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Ivy Bloom. Name and address, please.
Ivy Bloom, 13294 South 96 Road, Pickerel, Nebraska.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yep.
Thank you. Go ahead, ma'am.
All right. Well, I know that nothing that I say today is going to change your vote or will probably matter to you, but we don't want a CAFO in our community. I live in the vicinity of this. I know we're going to smell raw sewage. That's what it is. I'm not going to be consoled with the fact that people tell me, oh, the technology's so great, you're not going to be able to smell it. We will be able to smell it. It's raw sewage. So just a question I'd like answered is the sewage pit, I know it's going to be 8 foot deep, but can you let me know how much raw sewage is going to be held? I know that it's going to be emptied maybe once a year. Is there a way it can be emptied more often so then we're not subjected to having the smell in our faces every time we walk out of our homes? When Gage County became livestock friendly, you actually became people unfriendly and actually animal unfriendly. I don't think it's friendly to any animals to be put in a facility not seeing the light of day, much less 6,250 pounds and over pigs. You chose commerce and corporations over the residents of Gage County. You're choosing an out-of-state corporation from Iowa and an out-of-county corporation from Jefferson County to come in and take over our lives, where we live, where our peace, where our homes are. This is factory animal farming. It's not family farming. And it's just really sad that Gage County doesn't care about the residents that live in our community. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Any questions for Ms. Bloom? Ms. Bloom, I mean, just in some of the research we've done on this and talking to people, it appears as when the manure is handled, in most cases, that's when you're going to get the odor, or that's when you'll have more noticeable odor. So part of not handling that will keep the odor down. It's when they're touching it, stirring it, aerating it, that's when you'll have more chance of odor.
Well, I can certainly let you know, because I'll be keeping track on a daily basis, and I can sure let this board know how much it stinks at my house. And then the other thing is my acreage is really nice. We've worked for almost 20 years restoring 108-year-old property. And for someone to come up here and say, oh, this hog facility is going to be nicer than most of the acreages around it, that's just disrespectful. And I've been to some of these hearings, and they have been disrespectful. And it's really concerning to me that people, like, can't even be nice to each other over this process. People can't be truthful over this process. And it's just too bad.
Tempers heat. I know
Thank
they do,
you.
But we will be respectful here. Thank you, Ms. Bloom. Doreen Wallman.
Can I speak for her?
Yes, sir. How do we do that, Roger?
You just go ahead and say that your wife would be in support of what you said. But
do I swear him in? I mean, Mr. Wallman, you've been sworn in. If you give your wife's testimony.
My wife's name is Doreen Wallman, Adams, Nebraska, 10771 South 96 Road. The reason I'm speaking for her, she's currently in the hospital with a stroke, or in Madonna. Her and I talked considerably when she still could talk, and she was totally against this building. And she was concerned about her grandkids. And but we hear about this water and stuff, and that's all good too, but we don't hear about the pathogens that come from the building and how that can affect our lungs and how that can affect our lives that we live within a mile. We've lived there our whole life. they just want to come in and ruin our, I mean, I don't know if they want to say ruin, but want to come in and possibly put pathogens in our lot, in our air. I have a problem with that. I've built an operation in that area. And my son lives close by. He's got a business close by. And I've got my children close by and my grandkids close by. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Austin Zimmerman didn't check if you want to speak or not. Name and address for the record, please.
Austin Zimmerman, 1235 West Pine Road, Wymore, Nebraska.
Will you raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please begin, sir.
Sure. Thank you for the time. I just wanted to reiterate a few things. In the world we live in today, we're trying to feed more people with less, and this this barn is point in case. It is very sustainable. It is designed to be the most energy efficient possible and to be the best stewards of the ground. I also want to point out that it is a local producer. It's a local builder here in town building it. Taxpayers within the state. And again, they're both stewards of the ground and the community and trying to do more with less and feed the world we live in. Any questions?
Mr. Zimmerman, what's your occupation?
I am the general manager of Midwest Livestock Systems, the company that will be building the facility, if approved.
Any other questions for Mr. Zimmerman? Thank you, sir. Laura Ficker.
Pass them around if you want.
Perfect.
Name and address, please.
Laura Ficar, 10609 South 96th Road, Adams, Nebraska, 68301.
I caught myself after I said that. Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you, ma'am.
Exhibit number five.
All right. This is basically what I gave to the Planning and Zoning Commission as well. I'm not going to read it all because I wasn't able to in my 3 minutes, so I'm just going to summarize. But I do have three questions with respect to this. And I do ask the board, how many of you guys have traveled to Iowa to see one of their operations firsthand, visited with the local county board and neighbors? You know, are they really walking the walk that they're saying? And I really challenge you guys to do that before you do. Do your vote. The other question I have is, how many trucks will truly be traveling this road? There was a Facebook post a few weeks ago in support of this, which is, you know, great as well, because I've been looking actually for people who are in support of this and get their side of it, but there were over 200 comments before it was removed. But a lot of the concerns, the individual dismissed the concerns of the citizens. So I do ask that you guys do take our concerns into account for this. But there was a comment about a road or a truck would be traveling the road every couple days. We were in some of the initial meetings, it was our understanding it would be every day, regardless of the road conditions. I know my dad has said a couple years ago when our kids still rode the bus, we had to take them to 82nd and Pickerel Road to get on the bus because the bus wouldn't even travel down 82nd because of the poor conditions. So if you've got a truck traveling, you know, when it's snowing, raining, and tearing up the road, you know, that is a concern, which leads me to my third question is, who will pay for the upkeep of the road? You know, is it us taxpayers that are now going to bear the burden of that in the future? So that's all I have at this point.
Any questions for Ms. Ficar? Thank you, ma'am.
Yep.
Scott Prestige.
signed in, but I think I'm on the agenda later on, so I need
to use your tall grass.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Do we have any other sheets of anyone that would like to speak in support or opposition? Anyone else signed in? Anyone else that would like to speak in support or opposition? Any questions from the board for anyone?
One follow-up.
Ms. Axby.
I think the one we discussed is you guys do intend to incinerate, correct? And you had to have the state permit before you could apply for the air quality permit to operate that incinerator. Do you, and then I believe I saw on the application that you had secondary options for mortality.
Emergency use.
Okay.
Catastrophic events, essentially.
For the record, Mr. Jacobson answered yes to those first two questions, and then said that would be in emergency situations, just so we have it for the recorded record. Any follow-up questions to anyone else that has presented?
Harry, who determines it's an emergency?
Please come to the – Mr. Jacobson, would you please come to the microphone?
I mean, that's going to be state veterinarian, Bruce or Livingston's, it'd be foreign animal disease of some sort.
So there'd be consultation with
– Or,
other officials.
Yes.
Other – within – outside of Summit Pork.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. If it's a catastrophic event, a lot of people will be involved because we obviously want to do what's best and
okay,
take care of the situation.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Any follow-up from the applicants or your representatives?
One thing that keeps coming up is why don't we put it at our place? Due to zoning laws, we cannot. We got too many houses too close to our acreage where we live, so that 80, there's just too many homes there.
Thank you, Mr. Otto. There's nothing else. Anyone else that would like to speak at public comment or at public hearing? Any other discussion from the board? Just leaving this open one last time.
Eric?
Yes, sir.
I do have a concern with what planning and zoning sent to us, one of the specifications. I don't know if that's
please
time now. One of the requirements of planning and zoning was to have four rows of trees around the entire site. I've done my own research on that, consulted two unrelated engineers, one with the NDEE and another with Natural Resources Conservation Service, and there is no environmental benefits to having four rows of trees around the entire operation, in their opinion.
So can I go ahead and address this issue? So I'll give you guys that. I don't know if Lisa was able to make copies or not. This map would basically be our proposed tree layout currently. And I'll leave this with the group too. This is a memo basically talking about the trees. Our initial plan was to plant two rows of trees on the north and west side to block the prevailing winds. With the research and basically working with our environmental group at Summit, basically we are amending it to three rows of trees. Attached in that visual, basically there'll be three rows of trees, which includes silver maples, which would be a fast-growing tree, one row of eastern cedar trees, which is a slow grower, hardier tree that is more receptive to not essentially dying in a long-term scenario, and then a row of bushes such as dogwoods or nannyberries. We work with Iowa State University on these tree plans. They've done a lot of research and correspondence specific to hog facilities and tree breaks and wind blocks. Everything I found in the NEB guide and ultimately the University of Nebraska was very specific to cattle feedlots and calving lots. This plan also will basically provide the windbreak on the prevailing winds, odor and dust control, and it ultimately, referring to that odor footprint, will you know, basically alleviate the most odor susceptibility based off of our tree plan. Basically, a few points I want planning and zoning on the recommendation that I want you guys to consider is, you know, ultimately four rows would require more building area closer to public water and public right-of-ways. Trees to the southeast of the barn would provide little to no benefit shown previously provided by the odor footprint tool from the University of Nebraska, and excess trees will ultimately increase snow drift on public right-of-ways and cause visibility issues in the long term with trucks accessing and leaving the site. So we'll leave this with you guys. Right now our plan is we have the plan regardless of what the, you know, ultimately working with the board, but to do the three rows of trees.
Ms. Axby.
Rows of trees, I believe the setback from a center of road is 75 feet. Is that 75 foot on that one side?
Yeah.
And then what side of the building are your vents on the building?
They'd be on the southeast side.
So from what I read, that's the most important side, is to have the trees on the vented side.
Well, I mean, yes, but we'll ultimately be blocking the northwest prevailing winds with the tree rows on the north and west side and allow our barn to be able to breathe.
No, there's two different...
Please don't. If you're going to speak, please come up and...
I think, I mean, just the research I did, the most important side is the southeast side. So I don't understand why we're leaving that one out.
The purpose of a tree plan are for many reasons. And so this is from the experience in livestock production and placement of livestock facilities and the resources we have and utilize. This is our proposed tree plan. It's not a requirement at the state level. Planning and zoning has made a recommendation. It's your guys' decision to use it. Initially, there was our plan at the last meeting was two rows. We went ahead and increased that to three. So that's what I'd like to share there. So the way this facility ventilates, there's all kinds of odor tools available beyond just a tree plan. We do, you know, and you don't put all of those specific tools into a plan to use because those technologies adapt. One technology is pit additives. Andy has talked to that in previous meetings. We plan to use that. If there's additional tools that become available, we're certainly going to implement what's practical and has strong results. So, but thank you.
I have a question for Mr. Jacobs, and I think probably we've talked about snow a little bit. Our blades aren't always on the roads. The township blades aren't always on the roads right away. Do you have some type of backup plan if snow removal is not getting to your facility?
Yeah, ultimately we'll work with Livingston and their transportation department, but they're local here. They're going to understand when snowstorms come in, and they've, you know, over time been able to adjust and, you know, be able to move loads in and out, you know, backup loads, prepare feed for, you know, when storm events are coming, they'll make sure feed's there before the snow event hits. But ultimately, we're going to, you know, work daily with Livingston's transportation department, but ultimately monitoring the weather. But they'll be, just because there's a load to go out at 6 o'clock and we get a foot of snow, don't mean, you know, it'll change.
I mean,
and ultimately work with the county, too, you know. Mark and I have had good conversations on it, but ultimately, you know, we're going to have to work.
Okay.
Specific to the tree plan, too, we are committing to putting a automated water system in to get it established and get the trees off going, so it's not just out there and we're depending on rainwater, essentially, because that's at my own house. I'm trying to grow trees right now, too, and ultimately I haven't been able to get enough water to them lately, and that's...
Your survival rate will be...
Yeah. So we're committed to getting them off and going and established with that automated water system.
Any other questions for anybody in the audience from the board? We've taken testimony from everybody. Unless
I answer your question for Carl.
For snow or for deliveries?
Transportation and monitoring the barn.
I think we got the gist of it from Carl. Thank you. Mr. Wallman, do you have anything new for us, or?
PNC, we said to go with the NEP guide.
I'm sorry?
What the NEP guide said for the trees. That's what PNC had said, that we should use the NEP guide. So that's why they're bringing in other information other than the NEP guide. So.
Thank you, sir. Any other questions in public hearing for anyone that's presented to us, or any other discussion in public hearing from the board? Mr. Schuler?
What have we done in the past for other special use permits for livestock operations in regards to trees?
I think every single special use permit's been individual. Would that be a fair
that
statement?
Is correct. To my knowledge, we have never put a condition on for trees to a CAFO. But I want to also clarify, the last CAFO permit that we had was prior to me. I served on the Planning and Zoning Commission at that particular time, and I believe that was one of Bruce's, which was now or before Plymouth Ag. And now Bruce Livingston owns that particular operation and operates it in Gage County. So, but, yeah, we've not placed that. When we heard the special use permit for Tucholsky's, for instance, the poultry operations, there was no condition placed on that. Disease always is a primary, what we heard from testimony, disease is always a primary concern. Wildlife, you know, birds, migrating birds, especially in the in the world of poultry with avian flu and then following the bodies of water, you know, for landing can be higher risks too. So I think that's why the industry has somewhat gotten away from placing trees around poultry production. But not saying that it's not done. It's just that it's not their industry standard. So,
Terry, would you pass that tree exhibit back to us? We do need that for the file, just so that you don't make off with that.
Nope. I believe, too, just referencing, I gave you guys a bunch of pictures of just random production that I took, no one in particular, but just, you know, feedlots, poultry, and also swine operations. So you could see existing livestock producers. I'm just going to use a reference of our own production operation. You know, they were existing tree lines, you know, and then, you know, to the north and to the west, honestly, then it was just our own farm management. But you'll see older existing operations compared to new ones. A lot of the new facilities don't have them. So
I would note it from the Planning and Zoning Commission. I think Dennis came up with this as kind of a I don't want, compromise is the wrong word, but I can't come up with the right one. But in talking with the applicants and Mr. Wallman's concerns, he put that in as a condition just to, you know, kind of try to find that common ground. So whether it's three or four, there are pros and cons with trees, as has been pointed out by Mr. Schuler.
All right. If there's nothing more for public hearing, I would ask for a motion to come out of public hearing at 10:42.
So moved. Second.
Moved by Dorn, second by Swavely. Come out of public hearing at 10:42. Please vote. 7 in favor. Back in regular session. We will take a 10-minute recess at 10:42. We'll reconvene the board meeting at 10:55 on the clock. Up next on the agenda is approve or disapprove resolution number.
Do you want to vote on that motion?
On
that motion?
You you have Terry's motion.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. We have a motion by Juergens, second by Swavely, to make all records previously received by the Planning and Zoning as well as Board of Supervisors available to the clerk or the clerk's office for future reference in regards to...
And receive them as exhibits.
Individually or as an exhibit number?
I would say that we're going to have to go through... You had each one of those...
I do.
Each of the exhibits?
Yeah, I do from our hearing, and then in addition to the exhibits from our March 2nd hearing, and then whatever you...
Let's do this. We'll talk to Don and see what's the easiest way. We're not going to do it today.
No, I know, but I'll just remark them with my own exhibits if we're entering them in all into here then.
Yeah, okay. But we'll talk to you as far as what's best as far as reference.
Okay.
So receive each of those pieces of information previously received as exhibits in the clerk's office.
For purposes, yeah.
Any discussion on that? If not, please vote. 7 in favor of receiving those.
Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. Up next, approve or disapprove resolution number 23-11. Special use permit 2023-2A for the placement of a swine CAFO to be located in the northwest quarter of section 1157 Hanover Township.
Eric?
I'd ask for probably a motion and a second for discussion purpose, at least Ms. Haxby.
I'd like to preface this motion that these were both recommendations made by Planning and Zoning as well as discussions from our board. So I would move to approve the application with the following conditions. There shall be 4 rows of trees on each side of the facility running the span of the building's length and width, plus an additional minimum 10 feet in connecting, excluding driveways and waterways. They shall be planted at a minimum starting height of 3 feet, with a variety of evergreen species utilizing the NEB guide, and at least 2 rows being western red cedars, and must be planted at or above the height of the building pad. These trees shall be maintained over the life of the facility. If a tree needs to be replaced, it must be done within 1 year and in similar size. Trees must be planted before livestock enter the facility. There shall be a minimum of 3 groundwater monitoring wells. The facility shall meet the state requirement of 180 days holding pre-winter, cleared out by December 15th. All manure shall be injected in the ground unless there is an emergency situation. In that instance, surface application will be acceptable. However, if the surface application is within 1/2 mile of a dwelling, business, school, or church, the applicant will be required to furnish a good neighbor agreement. The applicant shall utilize an incinerator to manage mortality and shall acquire all necessary permits, i.e. air quality, and have it approved by the state before construction can begin. As for the secondary mortality management practices for emergency purposes, dead pile for rendering shall not be visible from the road, and if composting is used, the area in which they compost must have a concrete floor and sides. The entire structure, including attached facilities structure, shall maintain the 100-foot buffer from waters of the state, and the applicant shall not apply for National Pollution Elimination Discharge System permit at any time.
Second by Lytle. Motion by Haxby, second by Lytle. Ms. Haxby, will you go through that one more time? Not kidding. Just will you go through it just so I can...
How about I email it and then print it?
Can we just get print out?
Yeah.
Can you...
It's the 4 rows of trees that we got from Planning and Zoning. It's the 3 groundwater wells from Planning and Zoning, the emergency... application, stipulation, the incinerator use, structures, and the permit that they said they were not planning to apply for.
While Ms. Hill's getting this printed off for us,
I'm going to send it to you, Don.
Mr. Juergens.
Oh.
This is way, way overboard what Emily proposed here, in my opinion. Well overboard. We farm around a facility that Livingston's operates in southwest Gage County. It is spotless around that place. There is no order. It has an outside lagoon. We farm it. These trees is like us trying to tell you, Emily, put a tree in the middle of the driveway. You don't like looking at your door. They know where these trees have to be. They're willing to plant them. The plan they had looked perfect. So I will not vote for this.
Before we get this, I guess, Ms. Haxby, on the, I was trying to make notes, the 180 days of storage going into winter, and then empty by December 15th. Explain that to me.
Just so they're emptied by December 15th so they can make it through winter. So there's less of a chance for an emergency application.
Is manure always go down in the fall, or does that go in the spring sometimes?
Typically after harvest.
No. I just didn't know. I don't farm. Just looking at weather.
So I'm not subjecting, you know, right or wrong. I'm just saying that we do know that manure is injected in fall and in spring. It just depends upon the testing done on the nitrate levels and so forth. So Title 130, I believe, requires, help me out, 180 days storage, winter storage going in. So that's to suffice for the emergency side of, you know, not being able to entice. And I think that's what you're trying to cover, Emily, wasn't it, for your 180 days going into winter. So you're not prohibiting. She's just stating the backs out of Title 130.
So that's already stated prior to. Thank you.
Yeah, it's already. I believe if you reference the construction and operating permit, the protocols and so forth, you know, I think that's kind of what you followed to there. So, but.
So, Roger, you said to who? To Carl and Dean?
That's okay. I can share. I'll share.
She's got mine.
The four rows of trees came from the planning and zoning recommendation. I mean, I would be amendable. We can take it down to three like they had planned. If we want to do that and then say one row of western red cedars. I was just pulling from what PNZ had recommended on that one. All the research that I did is the necessary side for the trees is the vent side. And that, I'm guessing, is where that came from. So, like I said, I would be amendable if we wanted to amend that motion to go to three rows and then only say one row of western red cedars. I'm good with that, too.
Just picking this apart, just looking at a couple of these items, because it's a long motion. Applicant shall not apply for a national pollution elimination discharge system. That was something that was agreed to already.
Correct. They said they didn't have any intention.
I was looking at things that aren't an issue, just picking through these real quick. Maintain a 100-foot buffer from waters. That's already part of state regulation. Utilizing.
Just something I point out, and they said this to P&Z. Whenever you duplicate a jurisdiction that's not yours, you create more money, more costs, more monitoring responsibilities for you. And I'll preach that till the day they bury me. You know, the state's responsible for the groundwater. Now, that doesn't mean we don't care about it. That's absolutely tops. But it's covered. And if we have to make sure these are done, that means somebody's got to pay for this monitoring. So I just point that out. If it's already required, and I know Emily, it's probably like, well, what if they change it? Well, I hope to hell if they change it, they change it for the better, because groundwater is one of the biggest resources this state has. So I just point that out when you start duplicating things that are another somebody else's responsibility.
The 100-foot buffer is actually within ours, too, so we're not due.
Shall utilize an incinerator to manage mortality. And for an incinerator, you need the air quality permit, site construction before, and have it approved before the state second amendment. The incinerator and compost, is that the practice you intend to use anyway? The only there's language in there in this motion, not be visible from the road, which probably isn't an issue with the tree buffers. I guess my question for you, Mr. Otto or Mr. Jacobson, I guess I'll just read this portion. The applicant shall utilize an incinerator to manage mortality and shall acquire all necessary permits, air quality, for example, and have it approved by the state before construction can begin. As for secondary mortality management practices for emergency purpose, dead pile for rendering should not be visible from the road. And if composting is used, the area in which the compost must have a concrete floor and sides. Would that fall within what your practice would be anyway?
The state does not require.
Would you come to the microphone on just for record, please, sir?
If I remember correctly, it was we'd already gone over that with them, and that was the decision that they were going to incinerate.
Right. Incinerates our number one day-to-day mortality. It's strictly a catastrophic event that other options would be looked, because obviously we don't want dead piles of pigs laying around the incinerator, because the incinerator can't keep up because it's only so big, right? So I believe in the state permit we checked also rendering, so DARPRO, and then compost.
This has language specifically that would require a concrete floor and walls on your compost pile.
Right now we have no, you know, I guess what I would say, I know, is there's not going to be a compost bay, you know, formed at the site. So incineration and rendering will be the main two opportunities.
I will state also that, and most generally, when a catastrophic event happens to an operation, you have, which they stated before, you have several state agencies that assist them, along with the State Vets Association or the state veterinarian on staff, to work through them, such as a fire. I'm just going to throw one out. Fire, you know, they'll do burial, they'll do, you know, ground prep, things like that. So that's what we're referring to, catastrophic events.
And Ms. Haxby, I guess you're not talking about a catastrophic event. You're talking about if there's a compost area that's being utilized for day-to-day operations.
Well, it was listed as their secondary mortality practices. So
just compost?
Compost and render.
And the other thing, I think what you had brought up during testimony during planning and zoning is their supplier of the pigs, you know, for disease purposes request, you know, that's the first case scenario, is that for disease purposes to go ahead and incinerate. And then some of those larger pigs, you know, over 300 or 200 pounds, you know, that might be a compost. But having a little flexibility to make sense. Most of our operations in Gage County have that option, a compost or incinerate.
I know it's not the same type of operation. That chicken facility, I remember we talked about the compost pile there that Mr. Mulder put up.
Sure. So
did that end up with a concrete compost pile? Or?
So his compost pile has to do with his manure. It is not his mortality compost.
It's not for
so
them.
That was the one stipulation we had to go back on that one particular time when you got a couple complaints, was it had all to do with the dry litter management. But his composting on mortalities is done differently. So, but
could I just add one thing about the state requirements for composting? So if an operation is conducting composting and mortalities, really the only state requirement is that they do not discharge the waters of the state. So typically a composting operation is one of two things. Either it's an open bay that is all concrete with concrete walls, or it's under roof. And commonly if it's under roof, it's on a dirt floor. Because leaching doesn't happen without the transport factor of water. So, you know, I just throw that out. I'm not making a recommendation, but I think both both possibilities do a good job of preventing discharges. So
that's why, because I didn't figure you'd want to put another roof out there. So if we did a concrete floor sides, it would take care of that situation.
Do you know what the intention is for the compost pile at this time?
There is no intention of constructing a composting facility. It's listed as a secondary option if circumstances change.
So the plan is not for too many pigs to die so they can incinerate them.
That's the goal.
Okay, and this does say if composting is used, the area. So if that's used.
If.
I should have read the if. Sorry, just going through these.
And that's covered in the application or the information we got back from the state. As Lisa pointed out to me here, it states there that where was it?
Number 10.
Proper management of mortalities to ensure that they are not disposed of in a liquid manner. Liquid manure, stormwater or process, wastewater storage or treatment system that is not specifically designed. And then it's got a few other things that list there. And what Andy stated is correct. If you're going to have it outside and it's not covered by a roof, you'll have to have concrete floor and concrete walls. So it's really all covered. It's just putting it in the motion.
The good neighbor agreement and injection versus surface application, that's already been covered. That's the intention. And the three groundwater, minimum of three groundwater monitoring wells, that's also been addressed. That's part of the initial plan here. So really it comes down to the first paragraph as far as if it hasn't been agreed to or not. So instead of going over all of this, I thought if we can steer back towards that one item, everything else is basically already agreed to.
I would like to amend it then. So I would amend saying there shall be three instead of four rows of trees. And then after driveways, waterways, I realized I forgot one. I would do / field access because most likely you're not going to go around on the road to access that field. So / field access. And then also strike one and or two and put one row, and then row would be singular instead of plural.
The plan that they passed around for each one of us to look at had three rows around three sides. The southeast side didn't have it. Okay, and it's so yours is saying you're saying.
Three rows, and then they would have to put a few more trees, but there would be allowed a section for field access.
Would that be the whole southeast side?
No, I mean field access. You got to be able to get a tractor or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you got trucks coming in there, feed trucks.
I know.
Everything else, and we're going to be sticking trees all the way around this thing? Makes no sense.
Mr.
It doesn't work that way.
You got to have air movement.
I'd like to...
Mr. Lytle.
Go ahead.
Get this out of the way before I say anything.
Well, I worked for an RCS and had done many tree windbreak planting plans. And I learned from watching these windbreaks grow and people that planted trees that were larger. This is asking for 3 foot starting height of the tree. So you're going to have a 3 foot root. And it is not beneficial to plant a 3 foot high tree versus a seedling, because a seedling will establish its roots quicker, and provided it gets moisture, it will grow faster than a 3 foot tree. Also, I do not see the need to plant the trees at or above the height of the building pad. I think that's overkill. I don't know how much work it'd take to do on this site, but I think any site, any place in Gage County, the purposes of the trees is for windbreak. There's no, as I learned, and I originally thought myself, that there really isn't much or any environmental benefit for having trees four rows all the way around the building.
When I was designing windbreaks, we never recommended. We discouraged anybody from putting rows all the way around any building. So I think this needs to be changed. I like what they are proposing to do as a windbreak. That's all that's necessary. I propose, or I would recommend, that we do what they have in their plan.
I will say we have a motion and a second. Ms. Haxby moved to amend that motion with those potential changes. We do not have a second on that.
I would like to add one more part to that amendment.
Okay.
You said 3 foot. Is it, what, 2 foot in height? I've transplanted a lot of trees at 2 foot in height, and they take off. So.
Yeah.
So 2 foot.
But a seedling, and the NRD plants them. They're only about this tall above the building, and they take off. It's easier to plant. The roots take hold quicker. They establish faster than if you transplant them. That's just the fact of it. I've seen people go to the expense to digging a plug and pulling stuff out of the pastures and putting them in, you know, saving money and thinking they're going to have a windbreak faster, and the neighbor will go plant a windbreak with seedlings, and the seedlings will grow faster and be taller than the ones that were plucked out of someplace and used a plug to do it. It just...
On your amendment, I have 3 rows, add field access, and at least 1 row being western red cedar.
I'd be willing to go 2 foot. I mean, I've transplanted a lot of 2 foot trees just fine. Typically, like you said, they take off. Now, I've tried some bigger ones, and those have failed. So
2 foot?
I would do 2 foot.
I go with what the NRD plants here. They've planted thousands of these windbreaks, and with good establishment, I don't see the need for 2 foot.
Do we have a...
I'm Gary second. Already seconded.
Oh, Gary has... Okay, so we have a...
He agreed to the amendment.
So once Emily's got... what she wants to change set, then I'll tell you if I agree to second it or not.
Okay, so her amendment, sorry, Mr. Juergens, hold on just a second. Emily's amendment to the motion is 3 rows in lieu of 4, excluding driveways, waterways, and field access, adding field access, at least 1 row of red cedar, western red cedar instead of 2, and then the height of those trees being 2 feet. That's the amendment to the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I have something very important that I just thought of that you need to be aware of in regard to the MPDS comment.
Please approach and let us know.
I apologize to interrupt, but I just thought of the construction process requires a stormwater pollution prevention plan, which technically is under the MPDS standpoint, which I know what you're saying in your motion is in regard to an MPDS permit to discharge livestock waste. I think that's right and good. There's really no applicability to the site. But if your language says will not obtain an MPDS permit, it's actually required in the state permit that during construction they have to get what's called a SWIP plan, and that's under the MPDES standards. So you might want to I would recommend you specify the condition that it's in regard to an MPDS permit for livestock waste.
So
thank you. That's a good clarification.
That was my intention. So I would, I guess, add the in regards to, please say that last part, in regards to
an MPDS permit to discharge livestock waste.
Discharge livestock waste.
Time.
So at the end of that statement, it would say in regards to discharge livestock waste. That would be my motion then.
Do you still agree with that on your second, Mr. Lytle?
So I've got a question for Carl or Mitch. Can I ask questions before Raj? Okay. So my question to you guys is that P&Z had another hearing, what, week ago, roughly?
A week ago. Mm-hmm.
And the 5-to-1 recommendation that came to us was 4 rows, and obviously there was discussion there. You guys were present. You know,
I personally don't go to the P&Z because I want to have a natural conversation here. I don't want to regurgitate all the crap that was said there in that conversation. I want to have a natural conversation here. So when you had that conversation and they came out of there and recommended four rows, had you guys come to an agreement with them at that time? What was the conversation that went on there, and why did they come out of there with a recommendation of four rows of trees all the way around?
Carl, do you want to speak to that? I can generally.
I think it was just pretty specific, broad, and I think there was, you know, maybe something Mr. Wallman shared with them that's where the four rows of trees, but we've always proposed a two, now going to three. But there was really no conversation around the trees. And you know, I've done my research on the NEB guide. Like I said, I found a lot of tree stuff, but it's pertained to cattle facilities, essentially. So that's why we've looked into the Iowa State thing, where they have more pertained to swine operations. But, you know, basically we wanted to bring a proposal to you that we know and that we currently practice on our sites today that's proven and has the most efficiency and effectiveness, essentially. What did you say? You've planted the first trees in 2006, so we've done this for a long time, and we have the experience, and we know what works and what don't work. I think it was just pretty broad from P&Z that they, I don't want to say they threw something on the wall and hope it stuck, but I mean, there was, I don't feel like the data they used to make that recommendation is, you know, fits with what we've done.
What I shared with Carl on the way over here this morning was my first experience planting trees with Summit was on Easter Sunday in 2006. And on a hog site named the Mallard Bay site in Hardin County, Iowa. And we thought we were doing the right thing, but we had too many trees, too close to the right-of-way, and too close to the buildings. And we had to take them down. Luckily, we took them down after the neighbor's facility collapsed and ours stood. So when it comes to tree plans and what Emily has recommended, as I read that, we're our pro-environment, pro-planting trees, protecting our water quality, all of those things. We have common ground, true and true, all the way through on those things. But her tree plan recommendation in this motion isn't practical for this site, especially the way that site falls and the roadways that are around that site and how it's proposed. I have some concerns with. Also, the duplication of that Roger brought to that point as well. A number of these things are already requirements of the state. I just recommend in the last comment at the last meeting, and Andy's recommendation is with approval of state, you know, and we have that now. So I look forward to the further discussions, but there are certainly a number of concerns in that motion in regards to, is it the right thing to do for the environment, the building? I mean, you talk about compost, and if we put a snow load on that roof that's engineered to withstand normal snow loads, but you plant trees within 30 feet of a building, it's going to increase that risk, and then we will be having a catastrophic event, and we're here to prevent all efforts that we can to prevent catastrophic events, and some of those things I have concern over. Thanks. Kirk?
I would say, to be clear, the first three were recommendations from planning and zoning that I thought it'd be prudent to at least begin with here.
Right. Yeah, I agree to the changes as the second.
We have an amendment with a motion, an amendment by Haxby, second by Lytle. Once again, just quick review, three rows of trees in lieu of four. Including field access to the exclusions of driveways, waterways, / field access. One row of western red cedar instead of two. 2 foot tall trees instead of three. And attaching to the last paragraph, the applicant shall not apply for a national pollution elimination discharge system permit at any time in regards to discharge of livestock waste. Any questions on the amendment? This is only to the amendment, Mr. Jergens.
The amendment, but as far as the whole thing, I just want everybody aware of that. There's a lot of duplications in here that are not necessary. So if we're going to vote on that whole package like it is presented now, I won't vote for it. because of those duplications, exactly what your attorney had stated.
Okay. We'll get through the amendment to the motion first. Any questions on the amendment or clarifications, Mr. Schuler?
Is the height of the ground for the planting of the windbreak got to be at or above pad of the building? I didn't as hear you say that.
As listed right now, yes. That would be in the initial motion, not in the amendment.
Okay, so we're not...
These are only the changes to the initial motion. The initial motion would be as you have... Do you have this printed out?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. The initial motion is this, as we have in front of us. It's just those items that I just stated that are being...
So then we'll go again on the initial motion. Of course, the 2-foot tall trees are still in there.
2 foot instead of 3 foot. That's in the amendment also.
I just think that's impractical.
Hit the ground. 2 foot.
I don't understand why. Gain a little time maybe on growth. But they've got a watering system. It's just harder. It just makes it difficult. I've planted trees with the NRD. I'm going to go to a 2-foot. Then you're going to have to go buy trees from Earl Mays or someplace like that. I mean, it just makes it difficult. And I don't think it's necessary for the county to make it difficult for planting a windbreak by specifying 2-foot tall trees over a seedling. It just seems very unnecessary.
Any other discussion on the amendment
to
the motion?
I want to clarify the pad level. Will this building the footers and stuff and the walls when it's put in, will it be level with the ground or will it be above the ground?
It's going to be above grade.
By how much about?
On the north.
Mitch, will you come up to the microphone? And keep in mind, that's in the initial motion, not in the amendment, which we'll be voting on. So just keep that in mind, too.
Yeah, no, there's a 48-inch high dock loadout on the northwest side of the building.
Okay.
So, and that's flat level.
Will you give that height again, Mr. Baum?
Just think of the height of a semi-dock is the height of the slat on the northwest side of the facility.
Thank you.
So,
Mr. Schuler.
So you're going to have to fill.
We'll have to
based
fill.
Based on this, you're going to have to fill, which that fill could change the flow of the water off of the site and concentrate it in one spot, perhaps concentrate it at your driveways. I mean, you'd have to go out and look at it to know what it is. But you raise the boundary, the outside perimeter of that site to match the building pad, you're creating diversion of water.
And I would add that, you know, the structure itself is elevated 4 foot above the pad. The pad is elevated 5 to 7 foot of fill according to grade. So we're talking about, you know, I mean, to get trees at the grade of the building pad, we're talking about a berm that's 15 foot tall around the entire structure.
You ain't got enough room in your lot to build it.
I think it's, you're depending on how this motion goes, a way of saying you're not building here.
Because time you get a 6-to-1 slope on it, if you want something that's mowable or at a minimum a 4-to-1, you're going to use up much more space than you have.
I appreciate your practical thinking approach to this. It's can be very practical, I believe, guys, so. Yeah, thank you.
Any other discussion on the amendment to the motion?
So now, if we vote on this amendment, what's the next step? Because I'm concerned about this, about the height, okay?
Yeah, so. We vote on the amendment. It makes changes to this motion. We go back to the motion, and then we'll discuss the rest of the motion.
And it could be amended again.
Yes.
Could be amended again. There's no end to the possible amendments.
Now I know.
Come on. So, any discussion on the actual amendment as presented? Motion by Haxby, second by Lytle. Please vote on the amendment as discussed. 4 in favor with and 3 opposed, with Juergens, Schuler, and Dorn voting no. Motion carries. So, now we'll go back to the amendment. amendments won't take a supermajority. The voting for the actual motion in favor or in opposition will take a... We approve the amendment on a 4-3 vote. I state that with authority, but that's correct, right, Roger?
Correct.
Okay, just want to make sure that I'm not saying something wrong. So now we're back to the motion. So this motion would be as written with three rows of trees, one row of red cedars, field access as an exclusion, 2-foot height of trees, and adding in regards to discharge of livestock waste to the end. Mr. Lytle.
All right, so this first paragraph I do struggle with, and I knew there would be conversation on this. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm a tree expert. Did I stay at a Holiday Inn Express? No, I did sit on the back of a tree planter for a whole summer planting trees like what Don spoke of, and they're more like about 12 inches when you put them in the ground, and the mortality rate of those trees is not good. They do not survive well. I don't remember what the percentage was, but it's a low percentage of the trees that we planted that survived, usually in most places. I'm sure that was 30 years ago now, so I'm sure there's been, you know, new technologies as far as tree planting goes that's probably better at this point, but I can't tell you what is the best plan for putting those trees in at what height or whatever else. I do think that you can set up a good windbreak that is going to it's more than a windbreak. It is going to knock sediment down. It's going to keep it more contained on the site. There are more things to that windbreak than being just a windbreak. But I do think three rows, if you're using the right species, can do what needs to be done and be a good neighbor by having it there. But I'm not going to be able to tell you that this is the exact way it needs to be planted, this is what needs to be there, and what have you. I do think that we need to have some way that we can set that up, whether we need to change the pad, whether it's at the level of pad height or it's whatever, you know, that needs to be figured out also, because you know, with the building pad being built up so high, that is an unreasonable part of that. Emily made a good stab at putting this together. I think it's pretty well written for the most part. You're not a tree expert either, Emily, correct? The main thing that she's looking at is trying to put in there a general idea. I don't know the best way to phrase it to state what is wanted or what's expected here, but leave some ability to do the right and best practice as opposed to do it this specific way.
Mr. Swavely?
I think that they must be planted at or above the height of the building pad. Has to be stricken from it. I don't think that they can do that. Because if that's up here and the ground's graded to take care of what they want, those trees have to be planted out around there where the boundary is and be done with it. But I think that part has to be stricken. I wouldn't vote if you wanted it at pad height. That's not fair.
I realize that their height of that. I just know that I have driven by the site and the steepness of it. The idea was that, you know, if you have your building up here and the ground slopes away, you got your trees down here. You're not providing any sort of windbreak. Period. There's nothing. You don't get that. You're putting the building on top of a hill and the trees at the bottom. You're not getting the benefit from it. That was the intent. I don't know the best way to write it, guys. This was a very rough draft to start, and things can be amended. So if you have a better suggestion, let's do it.
Mr. Jurgens?
Can you withdraw your motion then, and I'll come up with something that I didn't clear? Oh.
No.
Okay.
You can amend it.
No, you got to do that.
No, you can amend it.
Strike out everything that's a duplication, just like Roger said.
Okay, so when you say that,
no,
I would say
okay.
just so I can be clear on what you're saying on that, we would strike.
The only duplication is the 100-foot buffer from the waters of the state.
That's a duplication.
That's the only duplication.
There were
two. No, that was it.
The 180 days of pre-winter, well, I guess it says they'll be emptied by the 15th of December. When you say cleared out, you mean empty the pit by the...
Yeah, that way we try to avoid the whole emergency thing. Most likely they're going to do it anyway. They want it out in the fall.
Okay, I'm not going to say what you mean. You tell me exactly what you mean, Mr. Juergens, on strickening, just so I have it right.
What Roger just spoke about from the state, whatever state rules are, we don't need to duplicate them.
The waters of the state is the
waters of the state. Get it out of there. Okay, what about the... they don't plan on building a compost pit.
I will say on that one, Mr. Juergens, it says if used, they'll build a compost pit, which they don't have a opposition to. That would be an if. I read it wrong the first time.
Is that statement viable? Why have it?
It's listed as a secondary in their application.
180 days. For emergency purposes.
You're putting a date. Yeah, you're putting a date on it.
And you'll have to read.
Mr. Jacobson, you'll have to talk at the mic if you just for.
If we would change at some point in time from incineration to composting, we would have to do that anyway for our state permit requirements. And it's not, we can't just change tomorrow and decide to go from incinerating to composting. It would take some time to get that concrete bay done. So, I mean, there would be some work done involved into it.
Even if you change.
So if we would change. We just won't wake up tomorrow and say, oh, we're changing the compost.
We're gonna compost a pig tomorrow.
Yeah.
Easy way to say it is we must follow the state's requirements of composting. It'd be a simple thing. Who knows? They may have more stringent requirements when that thing comes to play, right? So then it's whose regulation comes first. We're very flexible in understanding of your points. They're actually very good points. It's just the practicality and making sure the group is in compliance all the way around with all the regulating agencies. So, yes.
And the last one would be the tree part of it. You know, did that get changed?
Right now the trees are 3 rows, 2 foot tall, 1 row of red cedars.
As for what was the elevation removed and all that?
The elevation is still in that.
Yeah, see, that's...
That's got to come out.
That's got to come out.
You'd have to get the dirt off site. You wouldn't have enough.
Basically make a wall around the property.
So you're saying strike after one row being western red cedars, period, strike, and must be planted at or above the height of the building pad.
Yeah.
If I may comment, actually,
Eric, and also the 2 foot
cedars for a good windbreak.
Plant trees. I don't know why we have to dictate 2 foot in size. I mean, they might be 20 inches. Somebody could go measure them. Uh-oh, doesn't comply, tear them all out. I mean, that makes no sense to me to dictate the height of the tree you got to plant. They're going to plant a tree and they're going to put a water cyst in them, they're going to want them to grow.
And actually, Gary, I always thought the smaller the seedling, the better chance of survival.
I always thought the better chance for deer food.
Well, that's true. Yeah, there's always that risk. Even the larger trees are deer food.
Tree.
But a seedling, I call it a seedling, you know, and you planted for the NRD, you know what they're like then. But your chances of survival are better for that than a tree that is larger because they take more moisture. It's a bigger trauma to the tree. But
Ms. Axby,
we should ask the university.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not a tree expert, but it doesn't take much for that tree that you put in the ground. It doesn't take much to kill it.
Ms. Axby,
I mean, a rabbit comes by and bites
it. Oh, well, they can girdle a 2 foot tree.
I've been back by several of the locations that we planted trees, and the one up on the 14 mile curve is about the best stand of trees that we had that summer.
There's been a lot of others that, there was one at Duane Sims, I don't think there was a darn tree that, that survived.
Well, it still is like anything else, you got to have maintenance and follow-up
right.
to have survival.
Yep. Ms. Haxby.
So if I'm correct, the two things he was, we were, if we do what he's talking, it's striking that they just shall be planted with a variety, so we strike the at a minimum starting height of 2 feet and striking that, and then he would strike the waters of the state sentence and then striking the must be planted above the building pad height, correct? Those are the three.
Remove the waters of the state, strike planting at building height, and strike
the height requirement.
2 foot height. Okay. We have a motion by Juergens to amend the motion. We have an amendment, a motion to amend the motion by Juergens. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Swavely. Mr. Shuler.
Well, we were striking stuff here. It says the facility shall meet the state's requirement of 100 days of holding. Well, they well exceed the 180 days.
180 days of pre-winter holding.
Pre-winter.
They have, I believe, I might be saying this wrong, 400 days. I was going to say a year and a partial, but I didn't remember how many. So they have capacity of 400 days on this pit.
Right.
The date.
But do you have 180 days pre-winter? I guess I don't understand this. Maybe I'm confused about what this says.
Mr. Schulting, if
you'd like to clarify.
If you'd come up, please.
Yeah, so the design of the capacity of the structure is about 400 days. So probably a better word to use is that the facility shall maintain the state's requirement. And that's really in regard to manure management, manure pump down, I think is what Ms. Haxby was intending for management. We know that the structure itself is well above a whole year's worth of storage, but they still have to maintain the manure level. And it's standard practice to pump down in the fall
right.
in preparation for winter. So I don't see any issue with the requirement, but maybe the confusion, I think the question you're asking is, don't we already have the capacity
yes.
planned? We do, but you still have to maintain the levels properly.
Okay. So what would you recommend to word this so that it's...
Well, if you want to keep this, I think the facility shall maintain the state's requirement of 180 days storage. You know, we're not... The size of the pit isn't going to change, but the manure level changes. So they've got to maintain... And there's actually a pre-winter pump down level identified on the stage storage table in the plan, and that's required by their permit, that there's a certain level that they have to pump down to prior to every winter, and that is that 180 day storage volume.
Is that what your intent is then, Emily?
That was the intent, yes.
Is that, so
if we want to add striking meat to maintain as suggested, you want to add that?
The other part of that might be to strike the December 15th part of it. Terry, I'm just going to throw that out. It's your amendment, but I'm just going to throw it out there that because it's pre-winter. It's pre-winter.
Well, yeah. I was thinking because winter kind of technically is before that, and you know sometimes we're still hauling stuff. So if they're clear by December 15th, we are trying to avoid emergency situation applications. That was the intent.
Pre-winter.
Trying. Just to be specific, are you saying strike the entire first sentence of the third paragraph?
The
December 15th.
From beginning to the 15th, or just cleared out by December 15th?
The intent.
I'm not saying it's got to be cleared out.
Oh, no, I mean not cleared out. I'm saying, are you saying strike that first?
That 15th, that date.
And cleared out by December 15th, but leave the facility shall meet the state's requirement of 180 days of holding pre-winter.
Maintain
instead of meet. Correct?
Yes.
The facility shall maintain.
Almost no reason to have that without the date, because the idea of the date is that it has to be cleared out by that time.
Well, we're working on this amendment. We already have a motion and a second on this. Are you adding the facility shall maintain the state's requirement of 180 days and then get rid of the cleared out by December 15th? Get rid of the cleared out by December 15th. Remove December 15th requirement. Okay, we have a Mr. Swavely, are you okay with adding that to your second? We have an amendment on the floor. It will change the shall meet the state's requirements to the facility shall maintain the state's requirements of 180 days of holding pre-winter period. Strike clear out by December 15th. Remove the line with waters of the state. Also strike planted at building height. And strike 2-foot trees as planted. Those are the changes on the current amendment. Are there any questions or clarifications on the amendment to the motion?
Mr. Chairman, I do have a question for you as a board. One of the things that was added was the half a mile good neighbor agreement. Obviously, someone has to oversee that. What is, in your opinion, a good neighbor agreement? So, because that was added.
Let's deal with this amendment first, and then we'll touch back on the good neighbor agreement. Thanks for the clarification on that.
We're just voting on the amendment.
We're only voting on the Terry amendment that will remove those items. Any clarification or question? If not, please vote. 7 in favor. Amendment passes. Good neighbor agreement.
Third paragraph.
That's on the third paragraph. If the good neighbor agreement, please clarify that. Is that just
something I discussed with Dean because they have no intent of doing surface application, and if they're going to surface apply within a half a mile of somebody's home, place, school, they're going to go talk to them and make sure that is okay.
So if we're going to talk to him, is a letter okay, verbal just communication?
I'd say something written out saying it's okay that I'm going to apply here. That's what a good neighbor agreement is.
So can I ask the question of if the neighbor's not supportive of that, then Dean cannot apply manure there?
Right, they'd have to find a different place to apply. This is only surface application, only. Their intent
surface,
is to do
okay,
every...
not injectable.
Not injectable.
Thanks, Emily, for clarifying that.
Only surface application.
Okay. So do we need to spell that out just to
it
be
is.
Specific?
It is spelled out there.
Oh, okay.
But is it spelled out that if the neighbor doesn't agree,
does
they have to move?
Well, they can't furnish the good neighbor agreement if the neighbor doesn't sign it.
But do we have a form for that? I mean,
I guess
let's have something that says.
I'm wondering what your procedure is going to be and who's going to administer that and oversee that.
If you want to write, just put a written good neighbor agreement. Just leave it. You can,
who enforces that?
Well, the neighbor and Dean. I mean, if the neighbors say, whoa. But if you got something in writing, then you can bring it in and show it to Lisa.
Is there a penalty for that, though? I mean, if you go through and blast it out, oops, won't do it again. I mean,
I agree with the statement that he should notify a neighbor the half mile away. That's being a good neighbor. But if your neighbor half mile away in an emergency situation says no, that person's not being a good neighbor.
Maybe just recall.
Because it's an emergency situation. And if a person's in an emergency, as I would allow it next to me, in an emergency situation.
Or also
it
defining
at the Beatrice
surface,
Hospital,
you know, definition yearly. Of surface, too. So,
Ms. Haxby?
Per Roger's recommendation on that one, I'd like to add the word written.
We have a motion by Ms.
Recommendation. You're just trying to find a solution.
Solution. Sorry. Roger has attempted a solution.
We have a motion by Ms. Haxby to amend the motion
And I know what it's like to
paragraph
be
three,
I've staked terraces and weed stubble that's had manure applied right ahead of me and continued to.
We have a motion by Ms. Haxby to add the word written, a motion to amend the motion, paragraph 3.
Surface.
Required to furnish a, add the word written, good neighbor agreement. The motion, do we have a second? We have a motion to add the word written. Do we have a
second?
Juergens. Any discussion on adding that one word? If not, please vote. 7 in favor. Amendment passes. Motion, amendment to the motion passes. So right now, geez, what do we have? Something that says we have, there should be 3 rows of trees.
Do you want me to send another copy to Don so you can get it printed again?
That would be grand. There will be 3 rows of trees on each side of the facility running the span of the building's length and width plus an additional minimum of 10 feet and connecting, 10 feet and connecting, excluding driveways, waterways, field access. They shall be planted a minimum. We strike the minimum height. With a variety of evergreen species, at least one row will be western red cedar. We've struck, planted at the height of the building pad. The trees shall be maintained over the life of the facility. If a tree needs to be replaced, it will be done within 1 year and in similar size. Trees must be planted before the livestock enters the facility.
Eric, the must be planted at the at or above the height of the building pad was stricken.
Struck.
Also.
That's yeah. Also struck.
Yes.
That are above the building pad.
Read ahead.
3 monitoring wells. We've struck. The facility shall meet the state's. We've struck. We've added, instead of meet the state's requirement, maintain. I think so. The requirement of 180 days pre-winter, we've struck, cleared out by December 15th. All manure shall be injected. The rest of that paragraph remains the same. The end of it, furnish a written good neighbor agreement.
Thanks.
Yeah, secondary mortality management. Struck this.
In the amount of time that we've taken to do this, corn has gone from 5 down to 17 down. I'm just going to say that out loud. Just throwing it out there.
Well, thanks for that news.
Doug, do you want one?
For best I have facility, there should be a minimum of 3 and one mile.
Anybody else?
Additional amendment or discussion on this motion that's on the floor?
Just clarification. There shall be 3 rows of trees on each side of the facility running the span of the building's length and width. So how many sides?
A building has 4 sides.
So it's going to have 4 rows all the way around. That's what I'm asking.
Well, 3.
I mean, not 4 rows. 3 rows on all 4 sides, or 5 sides in this case, wherever that is. So has it got to go completely encompass
As written, it must encompass the building site, excluding driveways, waterways, and field access.
So there's a lot of space. I think there's two. There's going to be two waterways, two driveways, a field access. There's a lot of holes in there.
Especially on the south side, I would assume. Wouldn't your field access be on the south side?
And as Mr. Baum said, there's the one side would have to be built up 15 feet, so there's a fair disparage between pieces or perimeter of the building. So there's a
most likely that field access is going to be, like you said, on the probably south side somewhere. Then you have two on the north with a waterway and a driveway, and then you'd have two on the west with a waterway and a driveway. There'd be a lot of holes in it.
So is that more than you have planned? Well, I saw the picture of the plan. Pretty much all sides except that southeast side. But this would put trees on the southeast side.
You don't think like a 30-foot tall tree?
I don't see the need for that.
I live just south. Please don't let drop face. How he does too. And even the field access, please put that so that he has to bring it toward the west and not to the southeast corner. I mean, we don't want wind and everything going to our place and make a tunnel out of it.
I will tell all of you, thank you for treating each other well today. But we're discussing up here. I do appreciate the respect everyone's shown each other, and we want to continue that. We haven't had any. This is a hot topic and a very personal topic, so we really do appreciate how you've treated each other and how you've interacted. It's not easy, I know.
I'm saying the engineers I've consulted would not require this kind of a windbreak.
I've never dealt with engineers on a windbreak, so I can't say one way or another.
On a livestock facility.
No, that's what I mean, though, on something similar. But any additional discussion on this motion? We have a motion and a second on the actual motion with the two amendments.
I was just going to say the
three amendments.
No, expert in the field.
One failed.
What?
That one passed. No, you're right, three amendments. The first one did pass. Sorry.
Or three, right?
Three amendments.
Yeah. So, I was just going to say the experts that I talked to and the research that I did is that you want the trees on the vent side.
Three, yeah.
And that is the vent side. And I did put in there for field access because I do realize that you want airflow and you do need access to the field site because you probably do want to apply on that field. So that's why those were all included.
I'd like to talk to Terry about
that. Okay. I have another question. It said if the trees need to be replaced, it must be done within 1 year and in similar size. So if you have a 20-foot tree that dies, you got to replace it with a 20-foot tree. Is that what you're saying?
Are you going to put a little 6-inch tree back in there?
Well, it's hard to put a 20-footer in.
Be realistic. I mean, I'm...
Yeah, be realistic.
Yeah, I'm talking like you're not going to go to take out a 20-foot tree and put in a 6-inch one. And like, let's at that point try a little harder and put something bigger in.
Well, then perhaps this needs to be worded different. I mean, where do you... Because they're going to lose trees.
I would anticipate most of the trees will die in
first 5 years.
The earlier years, and there will be a lot of tree replacement unless we have some oddball...
Well, there is diseases in
disease
trees.
Disease that comes
There's
through.
Look at pine tip blight, and I have my trees sprayed every year to prevent them from dying.
Look at the landfill. I don't think they replace many. They just kind of... If they lose one, don't they kind of...
Well, they have enough rows. They have enough rows.
They've got four.
Depending on the size of your plant.
I don't have any cedars, though.
Depending on the size you plant them and how close you plant them, there might come a time where you actually have to eliminate a tree anyway.
I mean, and it depends on the spacing and the...
Mr. Swavely.
I want to see that layout that they presented to us. Do you have that, Dawn?
Yes, we've got that in the pile of exhibits.
Yeah, I want to see it.
Can we make copies?
On the west and the north.
It's got three rows, or three sides.
Mainly on the west and the north.
Yeah. I don't know if that thing's on.
Mr. Chairman, I'll also bring to your attention, though, when you looked at the solar regulations, for instance, the requirements of the trees, you know, around it, we stated continually maintained. So not specific, but we just said continually maintained for that effort. So just offering that up. So.
She's making a copy of that.
She's trying. You can leave me a voicemail.
While we're waiting for that, Lisa did point something else out as we were talking over here on the side. Just to be clear, I think most of us in here understand, but just so everybody's clear, where it states, however, in the instance surface application will be acceptable. However, surface application is within half mile. That part of it, the injected is subsoil. That's put underneath the ground. So the injected part is not a surface application. Surface application is when it's dropped on the top of the surface. Just so that's been stated and clear as though what you know the injected part is not a surface application. Did I explain that the way you wanted it?
Yes, just so we had it on record that, you know, the difference between, because we don't have that in a term or a definition or a common practice.
I'll wait till everybody gets a copy, then I can...
Yeah.
What's on? What's here? That's part of the field. Okay, got it. Got it. Never mind. Yeah.
Okay.
This is all open area.
There's a pond.
You know what?
To the top side.
Or maybe they're calling.
Okay. Go ahead, Dave.
This. Everybody looks at this. You know, it shows trees with openings for either waterways or entrances or whatever, but on the I guess it's southeast side. Okay, it shows a parallel line gone, and there's no trees in there. And I kind of like that layout, but according to what we're telling them now, they got to put trees on that side.
Correct.
Will that change your property line? Is there enough room? That's not my problem, but. Do you have enough room between the building and the property line?
Mr. Jacobson,
proposed property line.
If you answer, you'll have to come up to the mic, Mr. Jacobson, or Mr. Baum. I have not heard that this has been platted out at all, so there isn't a property line.
Survey. Yeah, I realize that.
Survey is complete.
It is complete.
Yep.
Apparently, this line is a proposed.
Yes,
line.
And it was surveyed based on the layout there. So. So it's very tight in that area with the pivot irrigation and the building and the grade to establish trees there. That's our recommendation and the benefit. And what I shared earlier, probably didn't say it very well, probably need to be sliding this building closer to water to create room for a tree. In this case now, three rows on that side. But we must maintain the 100 feet the way this is written, which is our state requirement as well. So. Do what you need.
Yep. That southeast side of the building will also have pump out areas for us to use, square pump out areas for when we do the application. So that's really going to minimize our area for us to be able to get in and be able to fill tankers, get it moved as tight as we are.
Carl, wouldn't that be a driveway or an access?
That's what we would look at it as.
That's
access
to
our barn.
Envisioning.
Yeah, I'm okay with this. We do everything we can to establish trees, irrigate them, get them growing. We'll use bare roots, the largest we can get.
I'm not here to satisfy you. I just have a working plan that works for whoever this is.
Right. I look forward, no matter who it is, I agree.
And I know in planning purposes, I mean, this can change the whole picture. But
I don't think we'll take comment from the floor again, Mr. Wallman. As presented, it's encompassed on four sides. I did talk to Mr. Argo. That was the intention of the planning and zoning, unless I misunderstood, Lisa. It was their intention to have four sides.
Around the building in their side.
That's what the motion was.
It was vague the last time. Somehow four rows became two rows. I just wanted to clarify with P&Z before, and that's not saying that's what we have to do at all, but just to pass along what they had stated. How they came to that four rows, I don't know. I wasn't at the meeting. That was their intention.
Yeah, that's what the motion was. Again, like I said earlier, I think it was more an accommodation.
It was.
When he made that motion, we were kind of at one of those lulls trying to find movement.
We were provided some documents that Robert had given us in the first packet that we received asking for the board to consider four rows of trees.
I really didn't think we'd come to this long a conversation on trees. I thought that would be, I figured for sure it'd be other items. It just goes to show when you think one thing's going to be controversial, it's always something else.
And we recognize Arbor Day as a holiday.
It is a state holiday, Arbor Day. Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. Is there any other discussion on the proposed motion? We have a motion and a second on the initial amendment, or on the initial motion that's been amended three times.
The initial.
So what are we voting on?
So hold on. We have a motion by Haxby, second by Leiter.
So we're going back to that. Okay.
This, if you look at the top of your sheet, it should say 11:50 a.m.
Yep. That's the motion we're voting on.
That's the motion on the floor right now, unless there's any changes that want to be made. Is there any other discussion, clarification, changes that anyone wishes to make to this specific motion, which this motion would be for Resolution 23-11, Special Use Permit 2023-2A.
So then that would be... A reason stated on record then, or stated conditions. Going back to this one.
Approved for the reason stated on the record. This would be approved for the reason stated on the record as through our discussion and amendments.
Okay. Check on the resolution.
As far as on the resolution, check this approved for the reason stated on the record.
It'd be both of those, right?
Do we need to go through anything on this?
Absolutely. I'm going to do that when you get down with all your motion.
Okay. Do you have a copy of this?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Right here, in yellow.
Oh. Any other changes, clarifications? Do you want to do that before we vote then, Roger, or
after? No, get your motions done where you got a final motion, and then I'm going to ask the two originators of the motion to go back and read that in under 6.2.
All right. So we have a motion and a second. Any other changes, clarifications?
This is for Resolution 23-11.
23-11. The motion is originally by Haxby, second by Lytle.
You already voted on your motion?
Not on the motion itself. Do you want us to vote on the actual motion yet?
Have you done the amendments?
The amendments are all voted on. And
this is the actual.
Okay, so this is a vote on the motion you're going to consider?
And this is what the motion itself is.
And that's going to be for the resolution.
I'd ask both Emily and Gary, under 6.2, you recall your procedures that you have to go in and basically say that we're considering those seven guidelines. that are in your P&Z book. And you can just reference that, but I find it also helpful that if you just quickly, you know, note that number three requires da-da-da-da. We've got evidence to that effect, wherever. Okay?
What Roger said?
Well, yeah. Again, by your zoning, you have to specifically make a finding. And I thought I'd let you go ahead and get all your amendments and everything done before you come down to your final.
This is the final. Yep.
Yeah. And so you have to reference that along with your motion.
So my motion, you want me to reread my motion?
No, you don't have to do that.
Okay. God, no. So I guess I would approve the application with our discussed conditions and find it to be compatible with our seven guidelines for...
Under 6.2.
Under 6.2.
Okay. Thank you. Okay with that?
I am okay with that. And that is after considering, I do know a couple up in the area that has a food services equipment business up there that is very concerned about this project and that affecting their business and some of their future endeavors that they had planned up that in that direction that they're concerned they're not going to be able to do anymore. With what Robert Wallman and some of these other people have considered, or brought in front of us. And I've looked hard at these things, and yes, I am in agreement with Emily on that it does fit our seven subjects.
Thank you.
One more comment. I'm just going to say, like, he's worked really hard on this. I'm pretty sure I lost a few nights of sleep trying to figure out what the right thing to do was. You were supposed to take a motion out of the situation, just look at the regulations, which, you know, is hard. It's hard to see it tear apart a community. It's hard to see how it'll affect the neighbors. But more than that, I think the ideology of farming has changed over time, unfortunately. Farming isn't just growing a crop to turn a dollar. It's about being a good neighbor, helping others, and caring. And I'm disappointed that the world is changing and has somehow leached into agriculture. I'm really hoping that my kids end up being farmers, and I hope that kind of a raised to be the old-time farmers where we care about more than just how can we make our next dollar. That being said, I do appreciate Dean's willingness to add these reasonable conditions to make this facility a little bit more tolerable for the neighbors.
Anything else prior to our vote? I'll just quickly thank everyone, like I say, for being cordial to each other. I know it's a hot topic when it gets close to people's homes. Just had a conversation with one of my neighbors the other day. One of his boys stopped by as I was getting the mail at the mailbox, and we were just talking about how neighbors have changed. It used to be everybody helped each other out. I'm sure all of you, I mean, in town it's a little different, I know, but I'm sure all of you can still relate to that. A lot of people don't even know their neighbors anymore, and it makes a big difference when things like this come up. With that, I would ask the board to vote on Resolution 23-11 as presented. Five in favor, with Schuler and Dorn voting no. Does meet the requirement of a supermajority. Resolution 23-11 passes. Did I say that wrong? Was it Dorn and Schuler?
Schuler, go on.
Next item of business.
We take a break.
We will take a 5-minute recess at 12:15. Not timing.
Oh. It was hard to keep track of what the heck he was voting on.
We will reconvene at 12:22 on the clock. We have a presentation by Scott Prestige on Tallgrass Energy and the new trailblazer project. Like I say, thank you for your patience. You are up. If you'd give your name and address for the record, go ahead and begin.
Sure. So I'm Scott Prestige.
Prestige,
yeah, that's fine. Address is 370 Van Gordon Street, Denver, Colorado, 80228. I have some copies I can provide.
That's all right.
We'll pass them out if you just...
I think there's only six of those, so I apologize.
That's right. There's only five of us here, so.
Okay. All right, so I'll jump into this. I'm the manager of state and local public affairs for Tallgrass. We don't mow lawns and do landscaping. We're a midstream pipeline company, but we're doing a lot of other things as well. So I'm going to give you a bit of an overview of the company, talk about what we're doing in Nebraska, and then I'm going to switch gears and specifically focus on our Trailblazer conversion project, and then talk about some safety components. And at any point you want to ask me questions, that'd be great. I know that it's already been a long day, so I don't want to keep you too long. So I'll jump straight into this. The first map here is a map of our national footprint. We operate in 14 states with over 10,000 miles of pipeline. The company was founded in 2012, born out of some Kinder Morgan assets, and then 2020 it was purchased as a private company, owned by sovereign wealth fund from the UK, Singapore, Japan, as well as Enagas, which is a utility based out of Spain in Europe, and then Blackstone investment portfolio. So those private owners have brought significant resources to bear to not only improve upon our operational footprint across the country, but also to invest in additional opportunities, which is on the next page, page three. Our pipeline footprint exists really in rural America, and there are significant opportunities to advance global markets for agricultural products. There are a few examples here that I'd like to point your attention to. One is this conversion project. I'm going to spend most of my time talking about Trailblazer, where we are going to convert a natural gas pipeline that's already existing, already in the ground, into CO2 transportation, which will have benefits for ethanol producers in being able to help them produce a low-carbon, value-added product with opportunity to sell in markets around the world, but also in a number of states that have shifted towards low-carbon fuel standards. We also have recently announced a joint venture with United Airlines and Green Plains, which is a large ethanol producer in the Midwest, to produce 2 billion gallons of sustainable aviation fuel. So we have a novel technology as part of this partnership where we can take ethanol and turn that into jet fuel as a molecular equivalent. We're also working with Japan's Osaka Gas and Green Plains to evaluate the production of synthetic methane from ethanol. And additionally, in the hydrogen space is another opportunity where we're spending significant resources to advance technology and infrastructure. We are going to convert a retired coal power generation facility in New Mexico and turn that into the world's first hydrogen power plant. So whether it's pipelines or power plants or other opportunities, we exist in this throwaway culture, our throwaway society. There are opportunities to maximize efficiency of these existing pieces of infrastructure that are still in great shape and have lots of years ahead of them to do something additional or something new from a power and energy standpoint. On slide four, you'll see a map of our footprint in the state of Nebraska. Nearly 100 employees, great average annual salary, significant taxpayer, approaching 3,000 miles of existing pipeline within the state. I really want to focus your attention on the red and blue lines on this page as those are the Trailblazer and the Rockies Express pipeline themselves. If we then move to the next page on slide 5, you can see them in this map. It's only looking at those two pipelines. And that's important because there's a significant opportunity based on their close proximity. So these two pipelines, again, already in the ground, both currently natural gas pipelines. The Rockies Express has significant available capacity. It's a large 42-inch diameter natural gas pipeline. So what we're looking to do is to move the natural gas from Trailblazer onto the Rockies Express pipeline because of that available capacity. The Rockies Express is fully bidirectional. It can move natural gas either way, wherever the market needs it. By making this move, we can honor all supply agreements. One of the questions that always comes up right away is, well, what's going to happen to my natural gas? Nothing. It'll still be there. It'll just be in a different pipeline. And so that leaves then the opportunity to do something different with the Trailblazer pipeline. If you could imagine, there are a number of power generation facilities, ammonia plants, and a number of ethanol plants in close proximity to this pipeline, plants that in many cases we already supply natural gas to. So our intention is to build a short gathering infrastructure to these ethanol plants. I'm sure you're probably aware of ethanol plants that are nearby. We're typically talking about gathering laterals that are tens of miles long, so not significant amount of new infrastructure to be placed based on the close proximity that is already here. What that will then entail, you see here the different colors associated with the pipelines themselves. We have filed with FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. We filed in May of 22 to build two natural gas pipelines to connect the systems. Those are 22 miles long and 18 miles long. You see that the purple infrastructure there, that's portions of the Trailblazer here in town that would remain in natural gas service. But again, there may be opportunities for customers in the CO2 space, and utilizing existing right-of-way is always our preference. The other thing that we applied with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to do is to decommission the blue portions of this pipeline, again, so that we can utilize it for CO2 transportation. What will happen is that there will be some construction that will occur where you have to replace valves, you have to add some new valves, and you have to adjust the compression and the direction that it's going. So currently you have compressor stations that are moving gas from west to east. We're going to need compressor stations that will move CO2 as a gas from east to west. Ultimately, building out a facility in southeastern Wyoming, where we will sequester more than 10 million tons of CO2 a year.
So looking on this map, the section going into Gage County, mm-hmm. will there be a lateral pipeline that will be carrying CO2, or will that only be gas in Fillmore and Gage and Saline then?
So right now the plan is that would be gas. But that right-of-way is already in existence, and there are conversations taking place with customers, potential customers, ethanol facilities that need that connectivity. So I can't say definitively that there will or will not be an additional, perhaps, CO2 lateral placed in the ground there, but it's being explored. As far as Trailblazer itself, the existing pipeline, that will remain in natural gas service because of the different service contracts that we have. Whether it's with local utilities, local gas suppliers, et cetera. Does that help answer the question?
So what you're saying is, like, when you say right of way, you mean easement with the landowner? Is that correct?
Correct. There are 1,200 existing easements in place with right of way owners along the pipeline today.
But you don't have any. Basically, your intent is to basically reallocate these existing pipes to something different, and then
just more of them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So really, there's no, I don't know, disturbing of ground per se.
No. So there would be a number of construction jobs as it relates to, again, replacing a valve, adding a new valve in isolated locations. But we're not talking about hundreds. We're talking about perhaps tens or dozens across the entire 400-mile
When you say valve, is that a valve like just I'm this is all new to me.
Sure.
A valve like underground, or is it the things that are already fenced off above ground that you have access to?
Exactly, the latter. It would be that opportunity where you would be able to shut off it. I should note, and I'll get to this in the safety section, that we're going to add automatic systems to these shutoff valves, but sometimes you have to conduct maintenance, testing, et cetera. So you have to have that surface access at those locations. But the pipeline itself is already under the ground, and a good portion of that maintenance can be conducted internally.
With a pig.
Correct. So switching to the next page and just looking a little bit at Gage County itself, you can see where Trailblazer terminates north of town in Beatrice. You know, the size of the investment of the project, the construction jobs that will occur, even though that pipe is in the ground, because of the compressor station that has to take place, the valve work that has to take place, there will be jobs, and that potentially could lead to traffic and noise and dust. And so we are doing a few things to try to minimize that.
Is this the above ground one? There's a plant just north of, trying to picture where that is, the one that exists already. Is it fenced off little areas?
I would have to see. I wouldn't want to speculate. But the valve access at the surface is relatively small.
Small. Yeah, it's fenced off. Is it possible it was like a Black Hills at one time? Or is?
So this was a former Kinder Morgan asset 10-plus years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This pipeline has been in the ground since the middle of the 1980s.
I think that one of them is on ours.
On your property?
I think so.
Okay, well, I hope you got my card. I'd love to follow up and we can confirm. Absolutely.
A lot of times it'll kill all the crops for miles.
Yeah.
What are the concerns with CO2 being transported versus natural gas versus anhydrous? I mean, what are the concerns on it? Are there hazards with CO2 in the ground?
So that's the safety section in just a couple pages. I'll go through that information.
Didn't mean to jump the gun.
No, you're absolutely fine. I want to emphasize that. I've been sort of speeding through this initial sections because I want to commit time to that. I do want to emphasize as it relates to the work that we're going to do to try to minimize any sort of impact as it relates to construction, truck traffic, et cetera. We are putting together a community advisory panel that will be made up of local community members nominated from across the state, where they will be able to serve as a sounding board and provide feedback on schedules. What impact will this have locally? What is the preferred way of going about it? We also have community feedback mechanisms put in place already for anybody to reach out. And as part of that, on page 7, you'll see, you know, the conversations that we have had to date. We've had open house meetings across the state. We had one in 2022 here in town, as well as in Hastings and Kearney. I'm sure there will be additional community open house events that will occur. But we've had conversations with local elected officials such as yourselves, state leaders, members of the federal government, and then a number of trade associations across the state, trying to get as much input and feedback from them as possible. We've been very grateful for their support. Transitioning to safety specifically, you know, we sit as members of the Nebraska 811 board and as members of the Nebraska Pipeline Association, because safety from our standpoint is critical for a number of reasons. The next page on slide 8, you know, I think that a lot of people are surprised that these pipelines have been around for a number of decades, for over 50 years. There's more than 5,000 miles of them operating today. Most of those are in southern United States, southeastern part of the United States. CO2 itself, Mr. Chair, to answer some of your specific questions, in and of itself, in its pure state, non-flammable, non-explosive, non-toxic, and it's not corrosive when it exists, again, by itself. The incident rate of pipelines on the right-hand side, for CO2 pipelines, if you compare pipe to pipe to pipe, CO2, the safety record has been tremendous. There was an accident of considerable note in Mississippi, in Setarsha, in 2021. And there were two big issues with that accident. One is the local first responders had little awareness as to where the pipe was, and they had no awareness of the product that was in it. The mixture within that pipe was a combination of CO2 and hydrogen sulfide. And so it created this when a landslide ruptured that pipeline, it created this cloud that ended up having to force the evacuation of 200 people. 45 to 50 of them had to go to the hospital for treatment, and then they were released. Fortunately, you know, no one died, and there were no major injuries. But that's an issue. From our standpoint, safety is two sides of an important equation. One is making sure that you're doing everything you can to mitigate risk, and the other is making sure that you have preparedness, that your local first responders know where the facilities are and what is in the pipe. Trailblazer, I just want to emphasize this. Since we've taken ownership of it, of the pipeline in 2012, there have been no unintended leaks and no major injuries related to that pipeline. On the next page, slide 9, there are a number of federal requirements that we have to follow in operating this pipeline, everything from maintenance and operation, control room processes, employee training, drug and alcohol testing, damage prevention, excavation, et cetera. I mentioned the construction, you know, part of our objective is to reduce risk is shortening the valve placement distance. If we can shorten the distance from valve to valve to valve, and we include automatic shutoff systems, if there ever was an accident that were to occur, we could shut off and isolate that flow so we don't have a problem that becomes a bigger problem. We can address it at a smaller scale. We monitor all of our pipelines 24/7, 365. There's built-in redundancy into that monitoring as well. And then we have our employees that live and work near the infrastructure. And so, again, from our standpoint, we want to do everything we can to minimize the risks and then do what we can to make sure that we are prepared. As part of that that process in this final page in slide 10, you know, we've had a number of introductory presentations to county emergency managers across the existing right-of-way, including with Lisa in town. We are about 2 months away from launching a first responder training program across the state, where we will have experts come out, provide seminars at multiple locations, talk about how CO2 behaves, what are the realistic risks, etc., and then we will record those presentations and make them available for folks who can't attend. That feedback and that information and that experience will drive what we want to see happen in relation to building an annual program in coordination with the state. We don't want to be ready one time. We want to create a preparedness that exists in the long run. Also, as it relates to that information and the information gathered, collectively that will inform the drafting and the writing of the emergency response plans that we will share with counties, county emergency managers, first responders, again, throughout the infrastructure footprint. All that will take place before going in service, going into operations in early 2025. So it sounds like a long time away. We've been doing a lot of work over the past 18 months, and we still have another 18 months in front of us. And so I wanted the opportunity just to be able to, one, give you the overview, make sure you have the opportunity to ask any questions, have a face and a name that if you want to reach out, you know who to contact.
You are our contact then if we have any questions or
you can reach
concerns.
Me. Absolutely. There are a few individuals on our team of note, myself, but also my counterpart, Sarah Myros. She will be in the area as well. And then my boss, Stephen Davidson, who's our VP of Government Public Affairs, he also will be available.
Is your pipeline going to carry anything else except CO2?
No. Great question, and I was trying to be mindful of time. To give you a quick overview of the ethanol process and the CO2 from ethanol plants, think of it as like brewing beer. CO2 bubbles off the top as the corn is essentially fermenting. It is in a very pure state at that stage already, 99.9% CO2. There's a little bit of moisture. You remove that moisture, and that CO2 is at a high grade and ready for pipeline transportation. In addition to the benefit to those ethanol companies and creating this value-added product and additional long-term surety for the feedstock growers, We're having companies reach out to us who are interested in acquiring pure CO2, whether it's for medical grade purposes, for food processing purposes. You have to have that pure stream, and so that's our objective.
So when that goes into the ground, you sequester it in Wyoming. Will that be a reservoir where you pull in and out, or all of your sales will come out of the existing line that you have? I mean, is that a two-way flow where you're pumping, it's going west, but as you need more, you can pull back then? Or that's not a realistic...
I know it works that way with natural gas. You have underground natural gas storage that then is utilized throughout the course of a year when you have seasons of higher demand. For the CO2, it's my current understanding that they will be able to sequester CO2, but there will be enough coming through the pipe itself that you could draw out for those one-off agreements for those purposes from the pipeline supply itself. Perhaps the demand will grow to the point where you would have to consider other long-term storage and then have access, but right now our objective is when it goes into the ground for sequestration, it's there permanently.
To expand on any of these pipelines, all you're doing is transitioning them, but to expand, if you were to expand, you'd have to get your landowner's permission to
correct
expand. It's not one of those utility industries with eminent domain.
Correct. So I can tell you, the longest CO2 lateral that we have that we're looking at right now is trying to create connectivity to ADM's facility in Columbus, Nebraska. It's the second largest ethanol facility in the country, 350 employees, 100 plus contractors. They produce a lot of ethanol. That corridor, potential corridor, is about 70 to 80 miles. That's, I think, at the long end of it. There are other ethanol facilities within close proximity to this pipeline where we're talking 2 miles, 10 miles, 8 miles, 20 miles. And so those distances are relatively short, and you would have to go out and have negotiations with those landowners about either reusing existing right-of-way or trying to establish new right-of-way. But I think our preference is to always try to reuse existing right-of-way whenever possible.
That was a conversation I know in the legislature at one point in time. Do you need a different right-of-way agreement to either use that pipe for CO2 or to put another pipe in that existing right-of-way you have? Or if you already have the right-of-way, can you go ahead and bury another pipe in that same right-of-way under your current agreements?
It's my understanding if you add new pipe, then you need a new agreement. That's my understanding. But as far as this particular pipe, many of the agreements, vast majority of them, allow a product to be transported in a gaseous state. So currently, natural gas moved in a gaseous state. We're going to move the CO2 at a lower pressure. If you get CO2 above 1,200 PSI, it starts to turn into a liquid. A lot of newer pipeline, you would transport it at a higher pressure of even maybe 2,200 PSI. This pipeline was built and designed to move product as a gas, and so it will be below 1,000 PSI. In some cases, maybe 600, 700, 800 PSI, depending. And so this pipe will move it in that capacity. But as far as your question goes, it's my understanding if there is new pipe, then you would work to have a new agreement, unless the agreement was designed at the outset with that in mind. But I wouldn't know those specifics. Exciting stuff.
I went to the meeting when you had it up here at the Holiday Inn. I still have the information at home about, because I've been waiting for more, so we got it today. So.
Well, I wanted to make sure I was here on CAFO Day, so.
Yeah. You had a fun one.
Any other questions?
We'll have another one coming up. You want to come back?
Work on my frequent flyer mileage.
Scott, thank you very much.
I really appreciate it.
We might reach out to you as we have questions or as things come up, but that gives us kind of a time frame. And and this is with it going right into our county, or basically your eastern point starting in our county. And I know there's at least a handful of ethanol plants that have already been looking at this in the future. That's good for all of us.
Yep. It's a value-added product at that point, which then has
a benefit to those corn growers, those feedstock suppliers.
That was my biggest question, I guess. Looking at this, it makes a lot more sense. What's going to happen with our natural gas flow, but with those crossovers, I mean, yep. And it being close to us, too, looks like you went just a little further west than you should have, but it's still good. In our southwestern corner, the pipelines and that, they are good revenue streams for the schools and stuff. So.
Property tax. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Thank you so much. Really
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Place on file. No.
Anything else for the good of the order?
Yeah.
Nothing else? If not, we will adjourn at 12:48.
Just
12:49.
Reconvene the meeting.
We'll reconvene at 12:49. I forgot there's a personnel issue that we need to talk about in closed session really quickly. It would be something we have to deal with now or wait another year. So I would ask for a motion to go into closed session at 12:49.
I'll move.
Second.
Moved by Dorn, second by Swavely.
Get a donut.
Please vote. 5 in favor, 4 in favor with Schuler voting no. Motion carries. We're in closed session.
Sorry about that.
Too late. We're in closed session. You can't unvote now.
Should,
we can. We have all of us here.
It's like 1, 2, 3. Hold on. We need one.
I'd ask for a motion to come out of closed session at 1:32.
Second. Oh, whatever.
Moved by
Emily, second by Swavely.
Moved by Haxby, second by Swavely. And I did not read this going into closed session. It was for necessary for the protection of the public interest for protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual. We are visiting about a personnel issue. Anything else? Oh, please vote. 5 in favor. We're back in regular session. Anything else for the good of the order before we adjourn a second time? If not, we'll adjourn at 1:32.